Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Talk Radio. Get more passionate debate, more outspoken opinion, and more digital debate for the UK. Your voice counts. Get it heard on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Hello and welcome to the Late Night Alternatives. Late Night Alternative. Ian Lee, sadly, is ill today, so both him and Kathy are away. So instead, you've got me, Andre Walker, your little Uncle Dre. And I must admit, I'm a little tiny weeny bit nervous, because I've never filled in for Ian before. And I know this show has a unique culture. Well, I've got to expect the unexpected. I don't know what's necessarily going to come over the next couple of hours. I know that you love your no-holds-barred calls where anything can be said and nothing is off-limits. So, fellow travellers, do not worry. You can still call me and tell me whatever it is that you want to say on 0344 499 1000. The usual rules apply. If it's crazy, if it's random, if it's bizarre, I'm good with that. I can never be Ian Lee, but what I can be is just somebody who can be here for you on this one night whilst an evil, evil, villainous bug of flu has taken away your top guy, the man that you really, really wanted to be here. We've got an absolutely action-packed show for you tonight. We're going to be talking about all the issues of the day. And also, whilst I normally do politics, you know, I just thought, because this is the Late Night Alternatives, Late Night Alternative, what I would do is I would come up with my 10 most ridiculous random news articles of the day. So that just proves to you, fellow travellers, that even though I'm usually a political geek, I'm willing to doff my cap to the culture of this show, and I hope that's why you will stick with me and give me a chance. You know what? Whilst Ian Lee is away, your Uncle Dre is at play. First up on the show, I'm going to be talking to David Mellor, the former Conservative Cabinet Minister, who's going to be talking about Donald Trump's visit to Britain next week. He's already endorsed Boris Johnson, or effectively endorsed Boris Johnson, for the Conservative leadership, and he said how much he likes Nigel Farage. Always a fly in the ointment, always controversial. Donald Trump never steps back from the limelight. Oh, and by the way, when we're talking about doing a phone in and giving me a call, you are welcome to tell me what you would say to Donald Trump if you met him for a beer or maybe a savoury at your local Wetherspoons in London next week. Tell me what you think Prince Charles would say. What will the Queen say? I don't think many of either of those two are that keen on him. Or what would you say to him? In the meantime, as I said, I'm joined now by David Mellor, the former Conservative Cabinet Minister, absolute legend, who's going to tell us a little bit about the implications, what a difficult subject to talk about, the implications of Donald Trump being in Britain. David, how are you?
I'm all right, but I don't think you need anyone else, Andrew. You're a fantastic show. And you're only doing this for one night. I can't believe it.
David, I'm going to go even further than that. This is my seventh ever radio show that I've hosted. So the kind of nerves are kicking in a little bit. But David, having such a legend like you and these marvellous listeners around me, I'm feeling like, you know, I'm feeling good about this. I'm feeling relaxed. Anyway, should Theresa May and the Conservative Party be feeling relaxed about Donald Trump being here next week?
I know, I think it's going to be a very difficult visit, isn't it? I mean, because Donald Trump is bringing the whole family, and they're really only interested, I think, in the royals and the palaces. And I think for a lot of people wish he was somewhere else on the planet and as far away as possible. So I think it's going to be very difficult. I suspect, too, that there will be quite a lot of demonstrations against him. He seems to have insulated himself from what he means to most people who follow politics. I mean, I can't think in all the years I can think back to, and I came in first American president I was conscious of was Eisenhower all those years ago, and I don't think there's ever been one like Donald Trump, and hopefully there will never be one like Donald Trump again.
In my lifetime, though, I remember all of the people in the 1980s going on about how awful Ronald Reagan was, how he's an extremist, how it's going to, you know, his activities are going to lead to a nuclear war. And then with George Bush, the most evil right-wing president ever. Is part of this just that there is a body of left-wingers in Britain who will hate anybody who is a Republican president?
Yes, so there are some people who would. But, you know, privilege of going to both of Ronald Reagan's inaugurations. I knew him quite well. Ronald Reagan was a kindly man. That didn't stop him getting attacked by an awful lot, as you say, of people who were on the left. But there was nothing wrong with Ronald Reagan as a person. Ronald Reagan, you know, behaved impeccable, had impeccable manners. Ronald Reagan, I think, would be deeply shocked by a lot of the stuff that Donald Trump gets up to. And we know that George W. Bush, who wasn't exactly the most popular president with an awful lot of people, not just left-wingers when he was in, George W. Bush is plainly appalled by Trump. Now, I think Trump is something completely different because, you know, most politicians, someone once said about the job of the politician was to plaster together the true and the false and therefrom manufacture the credible. And I think that's probably what most politicians do. But I don't think that that Trump bothers with what's true. He is only bothered with saying something loud enough and often enough that it becomes true, you know?
But isn't there a fundamental problem within the conservative movement, if you like? So, you and I are both conservatives. You are presumably from Putney, or at least that's where you were MP for, whereas I am from Manchester. And look, where I'm from, people kind of like Donald Trump and Brexit, whereas people in Putney are kind of appalled by both of them. Isn't that fundamentally the problem, that the kind of, you know, the Borises of this world have a popularity within one wing of the party, and they're kind of really hated on the other?
Well, I mean, I think the Conservative Party has become a house divided against itself, and that is the legacy of that crazy decision by David Cameron to have a referendum. But, no, I don't think, actually, that Trump is much of a Republican. He's much of a conservative. Don't forget, Donald Trump, you know, he was going on about lying Hillary and all the rest of it, but Donald Trump was a strong supporter of Hillary Clinton when she first became the senator in New York. He raised quite a lot of money for her. I think Donald Trump is basically a supporter of the Trump Party. He's basically a supporter of himself. And I think that he considers himself to be a super salesman, certainly. Yeah, he spent the whole of his life persuading people that he's a hugely successful businessman, when what he's managed to do is somehow keep afloat amidst a sea of bankruptcies and all manner of other things. You've got to admire his cheek. But I think to compare him with any previous president is wide of the mark, because I just think he is completely different. Now, there are those who say it's good that he's different, because he isn't a sort of what the Americans call a within the beltway politician. He's from outside the beltway. That plays well with the American people, and I think we're well aware on both sides of the Atlantic the extreme disillusionment that there is with politicians of all stripes. And Trump, but I can't help feeling at a certain point the grotesque untruths that Trump comes out with will catch him out. And I still think there's a long way to go on that Russian investigation, where, you know, the Mueller report, where Mueller has said the fact that he didn't recommend that Trump be indicted didn't mean he thought Trump wasn't guilty, you know. And I think that, you know, a lot of what was going on with Trump and the Russians, a lot of what has been going on with Trump and his inner circle, it's almost weirder than any a series like The West Wing. They wouldn't have dared make up Donald Trump.
Hey, politics is definitely not dull. But I wrote in my one of my columns for the New York Observer that whatever you think about Donald Trump, he's one of the most pro-British American presidents ever. If you think about it, he's only ever had two political jobs. One is President of the United States, and the other is a business ambassador for the government of Scotland. Is there nothing to be said for the fact that this guy is so pro-British that, you know, that's good for this country, even though we wouldn't vote for him? And actually, as a head of state, I think we much prefer somebody like the Queen than his bombastic tweeting.
No, I mean, you make a good point that his mother, of course, was Scottish, so he is half British. But, you know, when it said, I mean, he reinstated the Churchill bust in the Oval Office, which his predecessor had removed. But, you know, the fact that Donald Trump is pro-British doesn't always make him helpful, and doesn't mean that he won't be pro lots of other things if it suited him. And I don't think there's much consistency of purpose in what Donald Trump says. But, you know, the real problem, we come back to this visit, if Donald Trump and the family expect to be warmly greeted, I suspect they're in for disappointment. They will be warmly greeted by those who have to greet them. But outside of that, do you think, I mean, ask yourself this, I mean, were you going to go on the streets and cheer for him?
Well, I think it's a funny thing, isn't it? Because Donald Trump is sophisticated enough. He'd always said that what he wanted to do was go to Windsor and Blenheim Palace. I think that he always said that he would be made to feel unwelcome in London itself. Now, obviously, because it's a state visit, he now has to go to Buckingham Palace. I think part of the problem, David, is this. I think there is a degree of hypocrisy here. I get the whole argument that says this is our closest ally, therefore we need to be critical where we see wrongdoing. I also get the whole thing that we have a difficulty in this country that we don't like merging the head of state and head of government role in a way. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, there wasn't these big protests for President Xi of China, although there were some protests. There was no protest when Robert Mugabe came over. And there's been all sorts of rotters and despots who are far worse than Donald Trump. And it just feels like sometimes, you know, we are overly critical of the Americans.
Well, you make a good point, and of course you should be doing this all the time, before you've got your finger on the trigger very well. But I think the problem with Trump is that he has set out to be really bigger almost than the game. The things he says, the things he does, everything he does is, you know, I mean, would you ever have believed before he became president that a president would just sit in his office in the early hours of the morning and tweet? He wouldn't, but he tweets. In other words, he's made himself high profile, and he's made himself high profile in a way that is going to make it extremely difficult for him to live down a lot of the things that he said. He's probably very proud of what he said, but a lot of people hate what he said, and they will be seen on the streets of London next week.
David, if you were running one of the Conservative leadership campaigns, say Boris, would you be keen or anti a Donald Trump endorsement?
Well, I know, because there's rumours going around that something is going to be said, perhaps even overnight, about Trump and who he endorses. I do not think for a single solitary moment that if, let's say, I don't know, for the sake of the argument, Boris gets the endorsement of Donald Trump, I honestly do not believe that that will help him one little bit.
That was David Mellor. David, thank you so much for coming on. And remember what David said, and I'm talking directly to the bosses at Talk Radio. He said that I was excellent and needed to be effectively given a permanent gig. Listen out to that. Listen out to that. Right, this man knows what he's talking about. He's a former cabinet minister, for goodness sake. David, thank you so much. After the break, we're going to be talking about the Conservative leadership with Andrew Bridgen from the ERG. And also, we're going to be taking some of your calls right after this.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome back. This is the Late Night Alternatives. Late Night Alternative, because Ian Lee has gone down with a bug. So here I am, Andre Walker, here through to 1 o'clock with you. And next, I want to take a call from Angela in Leicester. Angela, how are you?
Hi, I forget your name right now.
Andre. Don't forget the name. Don't forget the name. It's very important.
How do you pronounce it?
Andre.
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 Yeah, sorry. I've been practicing all night.
Now, Angela, I'm going to play a little game with you. I want you to pick a number from 1 to 10, because I've got 10 alternative news stories for the day. And if you pick a number from 1 to 10, I'll read you out that news story, and that can be the news story that you and I can have a bit of a discussion about, if you like. Go on.
Seven
is that One Direction star Liam Payne is now afraid to leave his house because he's frightened of being photographed by paparazzi. What do you think about that, Angela?
Probably true, actually.
No, it's definitely true. It's just whether it's a fair thing to complain about agoraphobia and never leave your house as a result of being afraid of paparazzi. I suppose, though, you know, he does get photographed a lot, and it's going to be a bit annoying. I mean, I don't know about you, I mean, you're a lady, but I often walk out my door with my fly undone in the morning and then, you know, quickly zip it up. If I was to be, you know, if I had paparazzi waiting outside my house, I could end up with some really, really embarrassing photos all the time.
Yeah, could do, couldn't you? I'm always out every day, though. I couldn't stay indoors all the time.
Well, the last person to stay indoors for 7 years was Julian Assange, and it didn't work out that well for him, did it?
Not really. But I think it's like, if you stay indoors too long, it will affect your health. Completely affect your health.
Apparently, you lack vitamin D, because it's something like your skin's like a leaf or something. It like creates vitamin D when the sun shines on it. So if you sit permanently indoors, you end up with real problems. Apparently, I didn't know that.
That's true. But while I was ringing in, you know, Donald Trump, President Trump, I should say, I would have a drink with him, and I'd say, I'm sorry, you're having a hard time because you're different.
What drink would you have with him?
I have my favourite drink, 1664 de Lager.
Oh, really? You're a Cronenberg drinker?
Quite like that. And I take him round, so if you don't want to visit London, I take him round Clothamnesta, and I'll just take him to some of the historic sites he's got left.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant.
I think we get on because we've both got a disability.
Well, let me just say, Angela, that I think if you got Donald Trump to, I don't know, Stonehenge, give him a few cans of Cronenberg, I'm sure he'd be absolutely delighted. What an iconic thing. The most iconic thing you can be as British is lagered up at a historic venue. Absolutely makes me proud to be British. That was Angela from Leicester. And now on to, actually, an old friend of mine, great guy, Andrew Bridgen, who is going to tell us a little bit about the Tory leadership. Andrew, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you, Andre.
This is your first, you and I's first time actually interacting on the radio together. I'm excited.
Well, then, no, it is 10:15. Let's not get too excited. Time for bed soon.
Okay, Andrew, the Dirty Dozen, 12 Conservatives, some of whom you've heard of, some of whom you've not heard of, are going for the leadership. How do you see it playing out? Who do you reckon in the end is going to win?
I don't know. It's I'm terrible at predicting, because whoever I back never wins anyway. So I'm not saying I didn't back the right person, but they didn't win in 2005 and 2016.
Presumably you're a Boris fan or a Raab fan.
It's got to be Eurosceptic. I've put down three red lines for who I'll back. It's got to be someone who opposed the withdrawal agreement bill.
Yes.
So that's most of the cabinet out. It's got to be someone who would be willing to persuade me that they're willing to leave without a deal on the 31st of October, because unless they can persuade me, they won't be able to persuade the European Union, therefore there's no chance of any further renegotiation of the appalling withdrawal agreement. And also, I want someone who's going to commit to scrap the white elephant that's HS2, which is causing grief and misery in northwest Leicestershire, and spend the money, the original budget, on improving transport infrastructure and broadband in the Midlands and the North.
What happens if somebody who is not a Eurosceptic, you know, Jeremy Hunt of this world, gets the Conservative Party leadership? I mean, can the Conservative Party itself survive? The most recent YouGov poll, I mean, the polling is driving me bananas, by the way. The media is obsessed with us all being pro-European Liberal Democrats, whereas, in fact, the big story is the Brexit Party surging. But assuming that you are a sane individual and you accept that the big news here is that the Brexit Party is surging, you know, can the Conservative Party itself survive with a pro-European leader in the face of the Farage challenge?
Well, I don't think we'll have any members left. I mean, 70-odd% of our membership voted to leave the European Union. I mean, my association, 90% voted to leave the European Union. I mean, these are our activists. These are the Conservative Party. I just don't see how you can have someone who's so out of step as our leader in the parliamentary party with the vast majority of our voluntary party and, indeed, the people who historically have voted Conservative. Impossible.
We cannot know, Andrew, what percentage of Conservative members voted for the Brexit Party, but I think that anybody with any sanity would be able to say that they spoke to people who quite openly, in vast numbers, were saying that they would not vote Conservative in the European elections. And when you're talking about losing activists, I mean, that is an extremely toxic thing. But what worries me about the Conservatives is this. there are people within the Conservative Parliamentary Party, now except Andrew, that you are not one of them, who just believes that we can do anything on this subject of Europe and it'll all be fine at the general election because Jeremy Corbyn previously supported the Irish Republicans and may or may not have laid a wreath for the Munich terrorists. But, you know, is that going to work? I don't think it will. I think, actually, there is no... It is not guaranteed that people will vote Conservative just out of fear for Corbyn. What do you think?
I think that's a very false premise. People have got more choice. There is the Brexit Party. You know, the Lib Dems are surging, apparently, with... You know, what I don't see what our leadership get is actually who votes Conservative now. When Theresa May got in and we had Lancaster House... the foreign speech, the Mansion House speech saying we were leaving the single market, the customs union. Then we had a fairly disastrous snap election. We'd already lost the Remain voters. Most of the Remain voters had left us. We'd got the Leave voters. And then when we didn't leave the European Union on the 29th of March, we haven't got anybody at all. And I think that's what the polling's showing us. And pure fear of Jeremy Corbyn, that doesn't get people to the polls to vote for the Conservative Party, and this isn't even about right or left. Leave, Remain is not a right or left issue. It's actually now about democracy, and it's whether you believe in democracy. If you don't believe in democracy, and it doesn't matter whether you vote to leave or remain, because whoever wins, we remain anyway, what does it matter if you vote in general elections? And then you just leave it down to the core vote of the Labour Party to vote Jeremy Corbyn in.
Great. Andrew Bridgin, thank you so much for your time. That's Andrew Bridgin, the Conservative MP for North West Leicestershire, I think, off the top of my head, and a member of the ERG. Now, I'm going to take one of the regular callers, I think, is Alan from Birmingham. Alan, the drill is this. I need you to give me a number between 1 and 10, because we're gonna give you some alternative news items for the day.
I'll give a number. I've got one question. Where's the Inn and Calf?
Sorry, say again?
Where's Ian and Cass?
Oh, I'm really sorry. Ian is slightly ill today, and therefore they put me in instead. Alan, I'm so sorry. You don't sound horribly impressed that I'm here instead of them.
Well, it was a bit of a shock, because I thought expect that you'd all late night goofiness for the late night or whatever, but I didn't expect to turn into LBC.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, look, Alan, all I can say is that I'm slightly more political than Ian. But fear not, as I said at the top of the show, my aim is to try and balance the unique culture of this show with some of my political interests. But, Alan, look, I want to give you some alternative news for the day. Are you going to give me a number between 1 and 10?
Okay,
come on, baby.
5.
Okay. The headline is Officers' Mess. Someone has pooed all over the officers' mess at RAF Brize Norton. A poo done it is underway after $3,500 worth of damage was done. It's the officers' mess, right? It's supposed to be the place where, you know, the people that protect our country in the Royal Air Force, you know, they hang out. Members of the public can't walk in, and £3,500 worth of damage to taxpayers funded carpets and furnishings from a poo attack, a dirty protest, if you like. What do you think of that?
That's what I call the SH1T hitting the fan.
genius. So, Alan, the other question I was going to ask you was this. If you ended up meeting Donald Trump, what would you say to him? What would you have a drink with him? You know, what would you drink and what would you say to him?
I would ask him what inspired him to create The Apprentice.
What inspired him to create The Apprentice? Surely he's just a member of staff who just got paid to appear, I don't know.
No, I mean, it was his idea, and he took it to Mark Burnett, and they collaborated the idea.
Is that right? Because obviously it's been
That's
huge
my theory.
It's been huge in Britain as well, hasn't it, with Sir Alan Sugar. It always amazes me.
Lord Sugar.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I was about to say that. What always amazes me about this is the way that Karen Bradley, or Karen Brady, I forget her name. Karen Brady is also a member of the House of Lords, but she calls herself Karen, and he calls himself Lord Sugar. How pretentious is that?
It's Lord Sugar sticking to his power by roots and being sexist.
Yes, that's probably right. So,
I'll tell you, I'll tell you, the best advice I've had was Nick Hewer, but we get to see him every day doing Countdown.
Yeah, he's kind of become quite big once. You know, I was walking through Soho, and I saw Nick Hewer once. I've just realised, Alan, that was the whole story, and it's not very interesting. But I did see Nick Hewer once in Soho. I didn't say hello to him, didn't talk to him, didn't interact with him in any way. I just walked past him. But, you know... Oh, to be fair, well, Alan, at least I've got a Nick Hewer story.
You've just given an idea for a topic.
What do you
Which
mean?
Which famous did you not interact with?
Yeah, who have you not? I'll tell you what I did once. I don't know if I can say this. I accidentally spilt my pint on Louis Walsh. I'm just gonna kind of do those exclamation marks when I say accidentally spilt my pint. I'd had a number of lagers that evening, and I saw Louis Walsh looking particularly pretentious, and so I accidentally stumbled and threw a drink all over him. He can move fairly fast when he's angry. I'll tell you that. Alan, have you ever met any celebrities then?
Well, I've actually met the saviour of Radio 1, now at Radio X, Chris Miles.
Oh, wow, that's good.
Daisy Solomon, Gordon Ramsay,
wow.
Justin Lee Collins, Tony Hadley, all at book signings.
Oh, really? So you're a big person for book signing. I went to one book signing once, it was with Terry Pratchett, and to be honest, it was just because my friend liked his books. I think he's died. Oh, yeah, he has died, has he?
Yes.
What a shame.
God rest him.
He seemed like quite a nice bloke, Terry Pratchett, but I, having never read any of his books, he was only of limited interest to have a conversation about a book. And I think also he took it quite badly when I walked up to the book signing, asking him, well, without a book, and not really wanting him to sign anything at all. Which I think...
I've done that with Leslie Grantham.
Really? Yeah, but look, Leslie Grantham's book, presumably you'd be better not reading it.
When I was working in the city centre, giving away free job papers, I actually went up to him and gave him a copy of our job paper, because he was unemployed at the time.
Oh, really? Well, you know, I remember in the 1980s, we used to go to all these sort of signings of things and personal appearances and whatever, but the sad fact is that most of the people that we met up with and got autographs from are now in prison. And so all these celebrities, like, I mean, I've got a signed picture of Fred Talbot, the weatherman, right? I suspect its value has declined somewhat in recent years, if indeed it was ever worth anything at all.
Yeah, I mean, I remember a time when I went to Liverpool, I actually saw the map, and I was tempted to jump on there and do the weather.
Alan from Birmingham, thank you so much. Now, listeners, I've got a piece of breaking news for you, because I think it's 10:30, and the Sun newspaper tomorrow will publish an exclusive interview with Donald Trump, in which he says, and I'm going to go through this, that Boris Johnson would make an excellent Prime Minister, effectively endorsing him. He criticises Jeremy Corbyn for making a mistake of not going to the state banquet. He tries to bury the hatchet with Meghan Markle. Remember, Meghan and Prince Harry are very close to Barack Obama, and not as keen on Donald Trump. And he also says that he's ready for war, or ready to battle, rather, with Prince Charles. They're going to meet privately, and apparently Donald Trump is going to stand his ground on the issue of climate change. So, listeners, we were all expecting it. We were all expecting President Trump to effectively endorse Boris. That is what he's done. It's in the Sun newspaper tomorrow exclusively. I've not got the paper yet. We're going to speak to the journalist who interviewed him, Tom Newton Dunn, at around 11:30. And we're going to bring you as much on that as we get the story coming out. Obviously, the Sun newspaper is a sister publication of Talk Radio. So we're hoping to get you some really good information on this story before anybody else. Anyway, more after the break.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Hello. This is Andre Walker. Ian Lee is ill, and so Kathy is staying away for the night as well. So we are doing tonight a show that I'm calling the Late Night Alternatives, Late Night Alternative. Fear not, fellow travellers. Ian Lee and Kathy will be back. They've not been sacked. They're just a little bit ill. And I'm going to sit in just for tonight to kind of help out Ian, who we, I think, need to wish a very, very, very speedy recovery. Just before the break, I brought you the breaking news that there has been an exclusive interview with Donald Trump in the Sun newspaper. I think we are just about able now to bring you some audio on that, where Donald Trump is going to tell us a little bit about his views on Boris.
Can I ask you about Prime Minister Boris Johnson?
Yes.
Are you looking forward to working with Prime Minister Boris Johnson?
Well, I like him. I've always liked him. I don't know that he's going to be chosen, but I think he's a very, very good guy, a very talented person.
Yeah.
He's been very positive about me and our country. But no, I do like him. I don't know who is going to get it. I'm not, it's something that I find very interesting, but... Yeah. And I actually have studied it, I think, very, very hard. I know the players. I know the different players. But I think Boris would do a very good job. I think it'd be excellent. I like him very much, but I haven't gotten to any point where, it's early in that process. We haven't discussed that.
Another problem he's got is he's had quite a few extramarital affairs. He's left his wife. He's got a love child. Oh. Does that sort of thing matter anymore, do you think?
Well, it always matters, but I think that it's certainly not what it was 20 years ago, and not what it was 50 years ago.
Mm.
I think today it matters much less. I could help anybody if I endorse them. I mean, we have had endorsements where they've gone up for 40, 50 points at a shot. Now, that's here, but I understand over there it would be a great endorsement. Other people have asked me for an endorsement too. I've been asked for endorsements, but
other leisure contenders have asked you for endorsements.
I don't want to say who, but other people have asked me for endorsement. Yeah.
No. Jeremy Hunt, the foreign secretary, I think you met when you were in Czechos.
Like him.
Yeah. Now he's made a big speech recently about increasing defence spending in the UK considerably above the 2% NATO target.
Good. I think that's great. I love that.
Would you like to see all the candidates say that?
Well, I think it's a good thing. I think. UK, it's great for the UK, and it will be part of trade. We make the greatest military equipment in the world. That would be good for us, but in particular, I think it's good for the UK. UK is a very special place. I mean, UK should be able to defend themselves.
Mm. Well, there you have it. I think Donald Trump actually a bit more guarded, perhaps, than I had expected, but I think it's very clear that he is keen to see Boris as Prime Minister. Obviously, he was supportive in the clip of military spending increasing and Jeremy Hunt's commitment to that. You will remember that he's had significant arguments with members of NATO. They have a duty or they have a treaty obligation to spend at least 2% of their GDP on military kit, hardware. I don't know soldiers. I don't know exactly how they assess it. But many countries don't do it, including some fairly rich ones, like I think specifically Germany. The UK does do it. We didn't always do it. And now there has been some talk from Jeremy Hunt of significantly increasing military spending. Well, though, I think that's an interesting thing to have. So as we find out more about this amazing interview with Donald Trump on in the Sun, we'll bring you more of it. And I'm definitely really keen. I think we're going to be able to bring you the journalist Tom Newton Dunn at 11:30. I think that's going to be fascinating. You'll remember that he interviewed President Trump last time, and I think he was the one that discovered that Donald Trump had suggested to Theresa May to sue the European Union as her opening tactic, to get out of the bloc. Now, on to more pressing domestic matters. Labour has been once again embroiled in an anti-Semitism row, where one of its members of its National Executive Committee, Pete Wilsman, by the way, is a guy that you often hear about. He's one of these quite senior backroom boys and one of the people who's regularly in trouble for kind of anti-Semitism. Actually, I should say alleged anti-Semitism, because obviously he strongly denies it. He says that he's anti-Israeli, not anti-Semitic. But a new recording has emerged of him where he's effectively saying that all sorts of problems within the Labour Party are some sort of Jewish conspiracy. I don't want to mischaracterise what the man says. You are welcome to listen to the tape. It's in most, it's on most news websites today. But I think it is fair to say that it's, you know, he came out with what is a kind of fairly typical conspiracy theory. And I think people are nervous that that in of itself is anti-Semitic. I'm joined now by Adam Langelban. Sorry, I hope I pronounced that right. Adam Langelban, yeah. Former Labour councillor and member of the Jewish Labour movement. Adam, from what I've heard from Pete Wilsman, your organisation is some sort of conspiracy with the State of Israel to take over British politics.
Yeah, I'm waiting for my check.
why is this happening? Because, I mean, most of us look at this. I'm not a Labour supporter, you know, and I'm not Jewish. But we look at this and we think, you know, the idea that we're talking about anti-Semitism in 2019 is bizarre. But the more of these undercover tapes you hear and the venom that you see from the political left, you know, you've got to conclude that these allegations, firstly, are genuine, and secondly, this is a pretty serious problem.
Well, to begin with, the allegations are genuine. I've seen hundreds and hundreds of complaints. I've read the testimony of thousands of people who have put in complaints. They are absolutely genuine. I think what makes it more shocking is that this is happening in the Labour Party, the party of supposed anti-racism. I joined the Labour Party for those very reasons 14 years ago. I've now left. People don't expect it to come from here. But its sickness has infected it, and that sickness is spreading throughout the party quicker than anyone could possibly have imagined.
What I don't understand, Adam, is this. We keep hearing from the Labour Party that the major problem that they've got, now they're being investigated by the Equalities and Human Rights Commission over anti-Semitism. They keep saying to us, oh, our disciplinary system is creaking, oh, we're so behind. The reason we haven't punished people properly for anti-Semitism is because there's just a backlog. And then suddenly, Alistair Campbell does something which I think is comparatively minor, endorsing the Lib Dems in an election where most pro-European Labour supporters voted Lib Dem. And suddenly he gets expelled immediately. Why was the process so easy for Alistair Campbell and so difficult if you're accused of racism?
Well, more than that, I think the Labour Party will have to chuck out half their members, because I think I read a poll this morning saying 55% of Labour members voted Lib Dem. But nonetheless, this isn't about culture. This isn't about process. The Labour Party keep talking about how this is a process issue and they're overrun. They can't possibly handle it. And now things are all better now that Jenny Formby's in charge. But actually, this is about a problem in the culture of the Labour Party, in the fact that culture is led from the top. And Jeremy Corbyn is either himself an anti-Semite or is unable to recognise anti-Semitism. And therefore, this is what allows it to continue. His NEC is made up of people who are also either anti-Semites themselves or are blind to it. Not everyone, but Pete Wilson is certainly in that camp. And if the organisation is led by such people, then it's impossible to tackle it. And that's why it's absolutely right that the Jewish Labour Movement referred the party to the EHRC for investigation.
What I don't understand about all of this is that I believe that you can be critical of France or the French Republic and not hate French people. And similarly, you know, some Jewish people are Israeli, others are not. I just don't understand why there's this obsession with some sort of a conspiracy that's going on. I mean, the idea that somebody who's a dual national or somebody who's of French descent is conspiring with the French government to undermine Britain is crazy. My dad was born in Athens. My mum was born in Ireland. The idea that they are by some sort of genetic birthright predisposed to be traitors is just madness, and I don't understand why it is Jewish people who always get this.
Well, this is the warped anti-Semitism that's infected the Labour Party. The idea of sort of dual loyalties of some kind is the sort of thing we were seeing in 19th century Austria or France. But somehow, it's made its way into the 21st century Labour Party, led by the most unlucky anti-racist in history.
Well, do you know, I always think, I know this is going to sound odd, and I don't want to be disrespectful to the problems that you are facing, because clearly they are serious, and I can understand, as it's the party you love, the idea that people within it are being kind of racist and behaving in a way that's unacceptable. But if you watch the various films and TV shows with Sacha Baron Cohen, where he plays Borat, and Borat is an Eastern European journalist, Central Asian journalist, supposed to be from Kazakhstan, and he's very, very anti-Semitic. But the joke within it is that anti-Semitism is effectively a backward thing. So people who are backward, people who are stupid, people who are badly educated would be anti-Semitic. Now that, to me, was the joke within Borat about the anti-Semitism. I don't know if you agree, but that's the way I saw it. And now suddenly to see a modern, sophisticated political party, Her Majesty's opposition, to effectively be copying the Joker, I mean, a comedy character, is just astonishing, isn't it?
You can make up. You honestly can make up. And you could make up the amount of times that Jeremy Corbyn himself has allowed himself to be surrounded by anti-Semites. It's only when it's pointed out at a much later date that he suddenly says, maybe you're right. Maybe that was a bit of a mistake. If you're an anti-racist, you don't put yourself into those spaces in the first place.
No, absolutely right. It's astonishing that he doesn't seem to be too worried about it. And I think that I do understand one thing. I do understand that there are legitimate questions about the behaviour of the Israeli government. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, I will say one thing, Adam. From my point of view, I don't think you abolish a country because you're unhappy with some of the policies of its government. But nonetheless, right, you can take that view. But it's the way that it boils over, the way it becomes acceptable to talk about. I mean, look, this is old style. This Pete Wilsman thing is old style Jewish conspiracy theory, Jew baiting, isn't it?
Yeah, and this isn't about Israel. Ultimately, I'm a massive critic of the state of Israel. I hate Benjamin Netanyahu. I want his Likud party to be replaced as soon as possible with something more to my liking. I abhor the occupation in the West Bank and Gaza, as do the vast majority of Jewish Labour Movement members. But this isn't about Israel. People in the Labour Party are using Israel as their excuse to mask their anti-Semitism. So in reality, the vast majority of what we see is Holocaust denial. It is historic anti-Semitic tropes about Jews and money and finance and capitalism. And then people mask it by removing the word Jew and inserting the word Zionist. But any Jew you speak to will know exactly what these people mean. It doesn't matter if you remove the word Jew and insert the word Zionist. We know they're talking about us.
Where does this end? The Labour Party appear to be incapable of rooting out anti-Semitism. You say they're not interested. I mean, I've no reason to disagree with you on that point. But what is going to be the solution? I mean, does every Jewish person just accept that the Labour Party is an anti-Semitic party? Or is there a way of actually changing the culture within the party?
I don't know. I've been working on this now as a member until I left a few months ago. For 3 years, I'm not sure what has to change. There has to be a huge awakening by Labour Party members that something has seriously, seriously gone wrong. That will almost certainly end up with them waking up to the fact that the current leadership are not up to dealing with this challenge because they themselves are complicit in it. And then maybe there's a chance, maybe. But I think the rot may be too deep now. I don't know. I really hope that's not the case. But my experience over the last few years has left myself and many other people who are Jewish in the Labour Party extremely scarred.
I think, Adam, anybody who is patriotic and wants to see this country do well would accept that it is a bad thing for a national political party, Her Majesty's opposition, to have racist elements within it. So I wish you good luck in your campaign to root out anti-Semitism within the Labour Party. That's Adam Langleburn, a former Labour councillor and member of the Jewish Labour Movement. Now, I did promise that we would continue to take calls as they normally do on the Late Night Alternative. And so after the break, I'm going to be speaking to Rainbow George, who I did speak to the other week, the other day when I was covering for James Whale. It was an exciting and interesting baptism of fire. But this is the Late Night Alternatives, Late Night Alternative. So you've got to give me the baptism right after this.
Digital debate for the UK. Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Hello, hello. Much to the lamentation of regular listeners on Twitter, Ian Lee is away and so is Kathy. So, unfortunately, you've got me, Andre Walker, just for one night only until Ian gets a little bit better. Now, I said to you that I would try to balance a bit of political stuff with the usual late night alternative calls, and I think that that from what I've read from the Twitter, you feel that we've not done enough calls. So let me now right that wrong. We've got Rainbow George. Rainbow George, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Walker the Talker, I think should be your title.
Now, Rainbow George, what I want is, I want you to pick a number between 1 and 10, because we're going to go through some alternative news, as this is the Late Night Alternatives, Late Night Alternative.
7.
7 has been done, that was the Liam Payne story. Any other number?
9.
Okay. Rainbow send-off for 4 million lotto winner. Melissa Eade's funeral in Hull featured a giant replica of her winning scratch card, and she showed up, the body showed up in a rainbow carriage. She died of heart disease, age 58. What do you think of the fact that you've won 4 million on the lottery, only to die shortly after of heart disease? Heartrending, and I don't mean that as a joke.
Well, I just see the rainbow connection, and I think it's a wonderful connection, and I think you should get a story in your New York Times on the back of this, because I'd like to talk about a new party.
Hang on, Rainbow George, can I just stop you there? Because you've just pointed something out which, idiotically, I'd completely missed. You picked the rainbow story from the list of 10. Now, I don't know if anyone... Well, I don't know if you can see this, but genuinely, anyone who's watching on the camera, I don't know if anyone is, but genuinely, number 9 was rainbow send-off for 4 million lotto winner. That's genuinely true. That was number 9.
Do you know the song, the Rainbow Connection?
No, go on.
Oh, I can't sing it. Kermit the Frog sings it in the first Muppet movie. And this is a bit of Rainbow Connection and Into the Mystic, and me being a 78-and-a-half-year-old Jew just really irritates me to hear the words anti-Semitism, because the Semites were a very large people and the Jews were only a very small percentage of the Semitic people. So call it what it is, call it anti-Jewish but not anti-Semitic. But anyway, there's a new political party emerging, and it's called the Wonder Party, Bands Party, and it's going to be made up of music bands, and we're targeting to get a music band in every constituency at the next general election, and targeting for a Brexit to the Wise Islands, sort of Wales, Ireland, Scotland, England, joining together and leading the way to a world of wonders.
Rainbow George, I've got something for you. Listen to this.
Rainbows are visions, but only illusions. And rainbows have,
I don't know the words,
to hide. So we've been told, and some choose to believe it. I know they're wrong. Wait and see.
Right, let's get rid of this now. Let's get rid of this. What do you think, Rainbow George? Look, that is me doffing my cap to you.
I want you to find something else on
YouTube. All right, steady on, right? Okay, we'll have a go. What is it?
Scoring goals auditions. And at the beginning of it is the voice of my late friend Ian Dury, and then an actor who played Ian Dury. Scoring goals auditions, if you just get the opening words of it, it would be nice.
Well, look, you know, there's a gallery of people looking straight at me. I'm happy to play it if you are, Hayley. It's entirely up to you. Yeah, look, you know, it sounds like, by the way, we've got Sam and Hayley in the gallery. It sounds like they are up for playing it, but they're looking for it right now, Rainbow George. So, but also, I do think, Rainbow George, there is a point to make here, which is that I think we've been very generous in playing something for you already. Are we going to play this now? Let's do it.
A door is being opened that nobody on earth can shut.
What is this? I don't even know what it is. By the way, I've got to say, the other thing that amazes me about Rainbow George is that he describes himself as 87 and a half. I thought normally the rule was when you got to about 15, you weren't half or quarters or thirds of a year old. I thought at 87, you're not going to be too worried, are you?
78 and a half, not 77.
Oh, I'm so sorry. 78 and a half. I got it the wrong way around. But look, I respect the fact that you're still following the kind of half years, because normally, once you get to that sort of age, you know, people aren't as worried about 6 months as they might have been when they were six.
No. I was also Paddy with the late comedian Peter Cook and a singer called Ronnie Carroll, who represented us in a couple of Eurovision song contests back in the 60s. Did you ever know of Ronnie Carroll? He stood in a number of by-elections and general elections for me in the past, because I entered the political arena in 1984, just after the Brighton bombing. There was a by-election. The MP for Enfield Southgate, Sir Anthony Berry, got killed in the bombing, so by-election came up in Enfield Southgate, which Michael Portillo won.
Rainbow George, I'm really sorry, but we're heading now towards the news, so I'm going to have to cut you off there. I'm really sorry. You know, I don't have a problem with speaking to him again later. It's not a problem. We can do two calls from the same person. It doesn't worry me. It's just we've got, we're now badly over time. Coming up after this, we're going to be chatting to, we're going to be chatting about loads more of stuff, and we're going to also have the, more of on the, Donald Trump exclusive interview, world exclusive interview with The Sun, even though some of the listeners are not that impressed with the fact that we're playing any of this. But all of that comes up after the news.
Talk radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Talk radio. Get more passionate debate, more outspoken opinion, and more digital debate for the UK. Your voice counts. Get it heard on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Hello, welcome back. My name's Andre Walker. I'm not Ian Lee, nor am I Kathy Boyle. This is a show that I'm calling the Late Night Alternatives, Late Night Alternative. And that's because Ian is ill today. He's got a bit of a bug, so we're sending him much love, much hugs, and hoping that he gets well incredibly soon. I'm going to read you a couple of the tweets. I think some of you have been unkind to me. I know I'm not Ian Lee. I know I'm not Kathy Boyle, but I am doing my best. I'm trying to balance a bit of the political stuff with the usual late night alternative madness. Either way, don't worry, Ian Lee will be back soon. So, Joe says, what on earth is this at Talk Radio? I know Ian's not well, but blumming hell, I don't know if I can swear, blumming hell, in half an hour, the late night alternative has gone from being awesome to being LBC. Get the presenter off, says Joe. Don't worry, Joe. This is one night only. The late night alternative will return when Ian Lee is better. So do not worry. Roger says, Kadek having a go at Andre J.P. Walker for politics. This is the content I want at Talk Radio. Roger, I think you've got some taste. Some definite, definite taste. Now, I had wanted... I would wanted to talk to Nigel, but unfortunately we've not got Nigel. We're not able to do, he wants to do us a little bit of singing, but we'll get Nigel. Don't worry. Late night alternative regulars, you will get your fix of Nigel. You will get him. You will get him to sing to me, to serenade me. And this will be the first time ever that I've been serenaded by Nigel, because this is the first time ever that I've been on the late night alternatives. Well, the late night alternatives, late night alternative. And I'm looking forward to the Nigel singing, because obviously it's going to be a very special moment for me. This has been a baptism of fire. When I came into the studio at the last minute today. Anyway, Sir Philip Green has been charged with a sexual assault in the US. For more on that, we're going to be talking to Laurie Ann Power, who's a barrister at 25 Bedford Row Chambers. Laurie Ann, what has happened?
Good evening. Well, he has been charged in the US with four offences. It's a misdemeanor. It's effectively an accusation that he sexually assaulted, touched a female whilst he was there. This is something that had came up before in 2016, 2018 in Arizona, and nothing came of it there. Nothing, no charges were brought. But it seems that for whatever reason, these have been resurrected, and he has now been charged. So he will face charges in court in America.
But he's been accused recently, and I think it was Peter Hain who mentioned him in the House of Lords and used parliamentary privilege to name him as somebody.
That's right. Lord Hain used his parliamentary privilege to name Sir Philip, who had attempted to take out an injunction to prevent his name being released to the media. And so it transpires that there are, we don't know exactly how many, but numerous allegations that he has effectively acted in an improper fashion towards members of staff. It's not just sexual allegations of touching, but it's bullying, racial abuse. A number of different accusations have been made against him. And that was revealed earlier in the year.
Yeah, I mean, it's always funny because with this whole Me Too thing, I always think it's kind of a little bit, two things are different. Obviously, there's the sexual assault and then the sexual harassment, and it kind of gets put into the same thing. But one is really a sex offence. The other is much more to do with, you know, kind of just intimidating people and making people feel uncomfortable. Now, I say that they are two very different things, but of course, he has been accused of both.
I mean, it's worth saying, obviously, that he strenuously denies all accusations.
Of course.
Nature. So that's important. And like with many of these things, I think what we have to do is just wait to see how they unfold in court. You're absolutely right to point out that sexual harassment is different than sexual assault. But I think someone like Sir Philip would not really want to be tarnished with either one of these accusations.
And what will happen now to Philip Green? How does it work in terms of the process? Because obviously, as you say, it's something that he strongly and firmly denies. He will put forward, presumably, a rigorous defence, and absolutely, then the court process will go ahead.
Yes, well, he's due to appear in court in Arizona in June, I think the 17th of June. He will, I'm presuming, from the representations that have been made, he will be entering not guilty pleas. And then he will have to go through the trial process, which will include the complainant coming forward and telling the court, giving an account of what she says happened. I mean, the accusation, in short, is that he touched her inappropriately. And that will manifest, that those allegations will manifest in court. And that will be before a jury. It's a misdemeanor in the sense of it's class three, so it's relatively low down in terms of the scale of seriousness. Each offence carries a penalty of a maximum of 30 days imprisonment.
Right.
So that gives you an idea of the categorisation. The reality is that he's not going to go into prison for any of these offences. It carries probation with it also. But, serious in terms of the accusations, definitely, and not good for him.
Lorianne Power, barrister at 25 Bedford Row Chambers, thank you so much. Now, apparently, I've been told by Sam and Hayley, who are the producers today, who are in the gallery, that I am wrong about Nigel. That, in fact, when I presented Talk Radio on Christmas Eve, Nigel did phone me up and did sing to me. And, in fact, I had completely forgotten about that. But now I remember, you know, it was wrong of me, and I do need to apologise to late-night alternative listeners for coming on this show and embarrassing myself by being dishonest with you and saying that I'd never been serenaded by Nigel. Let me tell you, that was a joyous and happy moment to be sung to by such a talk radio legend as Nigel from Maidstone. So, Nigel, can you accept my apology?
Oh, thanks ever so much. I really appreciate it. Thanks ever so much.
Right, now, yeah, so I really because this is the Late Night Alternative's Late Night Alternative, we want to do something. You know, I'm here for the first time, and I don't kind of understand exactly how things work. So my understanding is that you always phone up and you always have a particular song to sing. Yeah. How do you choose the songs?
Well, I've been looking through the karaoke things on YouTube, and I've chosen tonight to do the Elton John song, Something About the Way You Look Tonight.
Brilliant.
It suits my voice better because it's deeper than some of the pop songs that I do.
Before you go any further, I'm very keen on this idea of doing alternative headlines. So, what I want you to do is pick a number between 1 and 10. Now, we've already had 5, 7 and 9, so it's 1 to 5. 1 to 4, 6, 8, or 10.
Number 5.
No, we've had number 5.
Oh, sorry.
That was pooing in Bryce Norton. Okay.
Number 4.
Okay. Apparently. So, do you know what? I'll read this out. Woody Woodpecker. Right? The story is of the woodpecker's nudist camp that has installed CCTV, but a man in his 60s has been thrown out of the resort because they discovered him with a large erection walking around. Now, I've never been to a nudist camp, Nigel. It does strike me that if there were to be nudist camp etiquette, then walking around aroused would be a pretty severe breach of the rules.
But you're not supposed to get aroused. I'm not in those places. I think it's you mustn't.
I get that that's against the rules and you're not meant to do it. Mm. But when they walk around going, oh well, there's nothing sexually attractive about a naked woman. Oh come on, right? What are you talking about?
It seems ridiculous. It's bound to happen, isn't it?
Yeah. I think you're literally just asking for trouble if you do that.
Okay, I've got to set my song up. I've got to start my song up now.
Nigel, do what you need to do. Remember, you are the expert. You are the experienced one. I am in your hands.
I was lucky tonight on Facebook. A good friend on Facebook said he enjoyed my singing and drumming on YouTube. So that's a compliment.
Absolutely brilliant.
He was one of my fans on the talk radio. Anyway, here we go. I'll just click there. Here we go.
Come on.
I've got to start it from the beginning.
Okay, no problem. This is all sounding fantastic. Go for it, Nigel. Good luck, mate.
There was a time I was everything and nothing all in one. But when you found me, I was feeling like a frosty sun.
I think we're having technical.
Now you light up every second of the day. But in the moonlight, you shine like a beacon on the bay. And I can't explain. But there's something about the way you look tonight.
Ba-da-ba.
takes my breath away.
Takes my breath away.
That's the feeling I get about you deep inside.
I think part of the problem with this, Nigel, is there is quite big gaps between the lyrics, which makes it a little bit difficult. But Nigel, here's what I wanted to ask you. The last time we spoke on Christmas Eve, I remember you saying that you were going to enter some sort of talent competition or something. Yeah. Something like the X Factor or Britain's Got Talent. Is that right? And what happened? Oh, I think he's still singing. Okay, I don't know what... I don't know what's taken place, but I really wanted to know from Nigel whether he ended up doing his X Factor or Britain's Got Talent, because I seem to remember that Nigel had said that his mother had died, or it was something like that, his mother had died, and he wanted to do this talent competition in honour of his mother, and I was very keen to do it. And I will say one thing, right, you know, I think it takes a lot of gumption to come on a national radio show and sing like that. Sorry, I don't want to make any value judgment about the quality of the singing. Anyway, look, unless you've got an echo on the mic, unless you're in the room at the time, unless it's a proper karaoke thing, you can never tell how good somebody's going to be. Anyway, that was Nigel singing. Oh, hang on. I'm happy. Right, gallery, Nigel is back. I'm happy to ask him what is going on. Nigel,
yeah, did it go cut off? Is it? Well, did you cut me off?
Not deliberately. Nigel.
I think it's just yes.
Nigel, what I was asking you is this: I thought that you were going to do, when you spoke to me on Christmas Eve, I thought you were going to do some sort of a TV talent show, something like the X Factor or Britain's Got Talent. Oh. And was that because your mother had died?
Well, I was going to do a concert in tribute for me mum in like a working men's club or something, but I've got yet to do that. I've got to arrange that. I haven't done it yet.
Well, look, you don't have to rush these things, but I did think it was a great thing to do.
I've had lots of things to do, sorting out bills, mainly bills and things, and food, and making sure I've got food and stuff.
Well, that's absolutely vitally important.
I had a terrible time, you know, with the stress of losing mum dying, it's really hard to carry on with things.
I can imagine.
Carry on with life.
Nigel, here's my next question, and regular listeners to the Late Night Alternative might know this, but how did you get into the singing? Right, what is it about singing that's so important to you?
Well, I started off as a drummer at 11 in working men's clubs, and I did sing a little bit in between the drumming, and I've done sort of small parts of singing since then, since I was 11. But I taught myself how to sing, most basic songs. But I'm a better drummer than I am a singer, because I was a professional drummer for 30 years. I went out with the Joe Loss Orchestra 30 years ago and did some concerts with the big bands.
Wow.
And, there's not many people, because I was quite young. I was 18 in London when I was working 7 days a week, only 18. I played for Danny Williams, the singer. You know the Moon River chap? Moon River? The black singer?
Yeah. It's
Danny Williams.
Well, Nigel, I'm a little bit younger than you, so I don't know who Danny Williams is, but...
Oh, it was the Moon River. Moon River, wider than a mile. That one.
I remember that.
I'm crossing you in style someday.
Moon River, la 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 la. I don't know the words, but never mind.
It's a difficult song to sing, actually. But he sang it terrific in a high voice, because he had a really high voice, Danny Williams. But I managed to. I was only 15 when I did a concert with Danny Williams. I can't believe I did. I've got a CV as long as my arm, you know, about the things I've done with big stars. And Jimmy Jones, the comedian. I did a comedian show on TV as a drummer in a show band. You remember the comedians with Jim Bowen?
Yes, I do.
Football Bullseye.
Super smashing great.
Yes, Jim Davison, Jimmy Jones, all the comedians. I was a back to the drummer.
By the way, Nigel, I'm gonna have to cut you off. I'm really sorry because we're gonna have to go to a break. But there's one thing I desperately want you to do for me. There is a video on YouTube where Jim Bowen tells a story about when two guys from Belfast come over to do what's it called, Bullseye, and they get, well, I won't tell you the full story, but I'll tell you what I'll do. I will put on Twitter with the hashtag, what is it, the late night alternative hashtag. I will put it up. Guys, you've all got to watch this Jim Bowen story. It is simply sensational, but I don't want to spoil it for you. Anyway, more of the Late Night Alternatives, Late Night Alternative with Andre Walker in for Ian Lee after this.
The mother of all radio stations, Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Hello, hello, this is the Late Night Alternatives, Late Night Alternative. Fear not, Ian Lee and Kathy will be back, I'm sure, tomorrow. Ian's just a little bit ill today. Now, I want to take a call, actually, and I know I'm not meant to, but I'm going to take a call from Ken in Newcastle. I have never spoken to Ken before, I don't think, but Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Andre. It's very kind of you to allow free speech. Thank you very much.
Now, Ken, what I want to do is I want you to give me a number between 1 and 10. I think the numbers that have gone is 1, 5, 7 and 9 have gone.
Okay, but I would like to talk to you about, if you don't mind after this, if there's time, that is, about warnings about the danger of a head-on collision in a car. They're very important.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I'll take number 3... Day. Number 3.
Okay. Mark Forsyth was fined £1,000 for slapping a woman's bum at the Royal Navy charity event. He was found not guilty of sexual assault, but he was done for common assault instead and had to pay £1,000. That was the most expensive slap he's ever had.
Yeah, well, that's that was abuse of the lady. I mean, a man shouldn't be slapping a woman's backside. I mean, that's... That's abuse of behaviour, isn't it?
It is actually, but I thought actually it probably is common assault rather than sexual, because probably he wasn't actually trying to grope her. He was messing about but going too far, I think is probably right. But also, I mean, if you were to go to a Royal Navy charity event, presumably the women there are members of the Royal Navy, and I'm not sure assaulting a member of the armed forces is a wise move under any circumstances.
But I'm sure he wouldn't have done that to a man, because if he'd done that to a man, most likely the man would have turned round and possibly give him a return more than a slap. But I think that the law of the land should be
upheld,
promoted in this situation, because men should be keep their hands to themselves and off of women. They should have more sense than that. But that's just my opinion. And yeah, I think it would be quite right to be fined. He should have got a heavier fine, I thought, than what he did, to warn other men to treat women properly.
Damn right. Okay, now, I did promise that you were going to tell me something about car head-on collisions. Go
yes.
for it.
Yes. Just before I begin, I remember when I worked as a bricklayer a long time ago, Andre, we used to get paid, a van used to come and pick us up, bring our wages on a Friday evening, and... We get paid by cash, and they get in an envelope. Then we all jumped into the back of the van, and we were taken into the town centre. Well, one Friday night this happened, and the foreman always jumped in the front with the driver. And lo and behold, there was a crash, and he went right through the windscreen, and lo and behold, he got killed. One minute they were preparing to go for a few pints of beer, as was the custom then on a Friday night. The next minute he was dead. Happened so suddenly by a crash in a car. He never had his seatbelt on at the time. But in the late 1980s, Andre, there was a TV commercials in the US, and they asked the viewers, what goes through the mind of a driver who is not wearing a seatbelt in a head-on collision? That was the proposition, the question to the TV watchers.
Yep.
And then they showed a crash dummy having its head crushed by a steering wheel in a collision. And the answer to the question was, what goes through the head of a driver who's in a head-on collision? The steering wheel.
Yes.
The steering steering wheel. They showed an action with the dummy. Now, this was scare tactics. They were trying to scare people to be careful and to wear their seatbelt. And nobody complained because it was a legitimate scare tactic because they were trying to protect people's health.
Do you know, when I was about 17, a friend of mine was driving his mum's car. It was one of these big Citroen BXs through a road. I don't know if any of the listeners know it, called Green Lane in Warrington, which is kind of winding, kind of country lane type thing. And you know, he was doing 80 and it was raining and it was really, really bad. And we actually went off the road and hit a tree and turned over and the car was upside down. And believe it or not, I tried to open the window, which I couldn't do, but actually I managed to, I don't know how I did it, it's crazy, but I managed to effectively pull the door off from the inside because I could feel liquid coming in and it smelled of petrol, so I thought I was about to be flambéed, I'm not joking. So I think that focuses your mind. But,
yes, but
you know, it was incredible. When I went back to the crash site, the tree was the only thing between me and a 30-foot ravine. And if he'd have gone off the road a little bit earlier or a little bit later, we'd have just been, I mean, killed instantly.
Yeah, well, there's an instance, Andre, when you should take time to thank God for sparing your life. Now, regarding the situation of the head-on collision, I'm a Christian, and sometimes I warn people about hell, and the people say, oh, you're trying to scare us, you're scaring us. Well, this is a legitimate tactic, because in the Bible, God has warned us over 100 times in the Bible that there is a literal place called hell following death. There's heaven or hell. And over 100 times in the Bible, God has warned us. And Jesus himself, he warns us in the Bible in over 46 verses that there is a place of
Ken, I'm really sorry, but I keep doing this to people. I'm really sorry, but it's really interesting to listen to you. But the problem is, we've got to go to the break in a moment. So I'm going to have to thank you and say, you know what? I'll say good night, God bless. I think that's an appropriate thing to say to Ken in Newcastle, who is a big Christian and wanted to talk to me about road traffic accidents and their relationship to God. Now, as you know, because I was talking about it before, the Sun newspaper has a worldwide exclusive front page story where Tom Newton Dunn, the political editor of said newspaper, has interviewed Donald Trump. The headline, I think, is I Back Boris, exclusive interview with Donald Trump. I think because the audio is now coming out about this, I think we've now got a little bit more audio that we can now play from this amazing worldwide exclusive interview.
Can we ask you about Theresa May? So obviously seeing the Prime Minister for talks on the Tuesday, I think.
Correct.
A little strange having a long day of talks with her, even doing much more business with her, because you won't ever see her again. She's going to go. She'll be gone by certainly the end of the summer, if before.
Well, this is the date that was chosen a long time ago. This was, you know, a very special date that was chosen, and nobody knew that you would be doing these things at this particular time.
Mm.
But I've had a nice relationship with Theresa May. I've had a good relationship with her, and we'll talk about things. Maybe there are some things that will be very productive. I think we'll have productive talks anyway, but who knew this was going to happen?
Mm. What do you think went wrong for her? I mean, you gave her a lot of some very frank advice, certainly on Brexit. We talked about that last time.
I think that and I've told her this, you know that. I think that UK allowed the European Union to have all the cards. And it's very hard to play well when one side has all the advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And I had mentioned to Theresa that you got to build up your ammunition. You have to build up your side in terms of points, or you're just going in and asking. I mean, it was just asking, and you know, they would say whatever they wanted. They had nothing to lose.
Mm.
They didn't give the European Union anything to lose.
Mm.
So things happened with the UK that having to do with borders and having to do with illegal immigration and having to do with taxes and lots of other things.
Mm.
And I'm sure that you could have built up a big advantage for your side and negotiated from strength. At the same time, you know, I respect Teresa, and she would certainly know the facts a lot better than I know.
Well, that was a Tom Newton Dunn, the political editor of the Sun newspaper, in the Oval Office with Donald Trump. We've got Tom, and we're going to speak to him just after the break.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Talk Radio.
Hello, hello. This is the Late Night Alternatives. Late Night Alternative. Ian Lee is sick and away, so your Uncle Dre is at play all through the day. No, I'm not doing any more of that. No, I'm absolutely not doing any more of that. Well, we've been bringing you breaking news throughout tonight about this front page of the Sun newspaper. Exclusive interview with Donald Trump ahead of his state visit, which begins next week. I'm joined now by Tom Newton Dunn, political editor of the Sun, who's been in the Oval Office with the big man himself. Tom, what was it like?
Good evening. Well, it was quite an experience. It's probably a once-in-a-lifetime experience for a journalist, so I don't expect to get invited back, but it was certainly fun to be there. It was quiet, to be honest. So all the TV box set dramas, House of Cards, you watch them all, this sort of frantic, busy Oval Office. It was quite the opposite. It was quite a quiet place, quite a small place. A few little corridors leading off to the back of the sort of back right of the White House, if you look at it from the front. But it was quite quiet and benign, really. Not really what I was expecting, but good fun all the same.
So, I suppose you'd often say once bitten, twice shy. Last time Donald Trump was in the UK, he did an interview with you, and I think you exposed that he told Theresa May to sue the European Union. But he still came back for more, and now obviously you've led with this "I back Boris," so obviously still kind of making the headlines. What was it about last time that made you so appealing this time?
Well, that's probably a question for him, I'm sure. He'd be very happy to explain, because he's got lots of time on his hands, obviously. Look, you know, we're the biggest newspaper. We ask these things. We ask many months in advance. I don't know, maybe he thinks he'll get a straight hearing from us. We put some pretty tough questions to him. You know, we asked him what he thought about what Meghan Markle said to him when she said she'd leave the United States and move to Canada if he got elected. We asked him why he's not very popular in Britain. I mean, it was quite a decent, grueling interview. So, I'm at the same time as giving him a once-over, I think we also give him some space to say what he wants to say. And the interesting thing about Donald Trump, you know, whatever you think about him, is that he really does love Britain. In a way which I think he's probably not given credit for. He's incredibly excited about coming over next week, coming to meet the Queen, who his mother was a enormous fan of. He's bringing most of his family. His four grown-up children are coming over with him, which I think, you know, testifies to how proud he is of this moment. So I think he generally feels like he wants to communicate with the country. I think he's obviously aware that he may not be as popular as he is in maybe some US states, and he probably wants to try and fix that. Talking to us and getting his views across, then, you know, clearly we're happy to help.
It always amazed me when Donald Trump kind of appeared on the TV and he mentioned that his mum was from Lewis, that he in Scotland, which he described as proper Scotland. Now, you've got to be fairly Scottish to know that there's a differentiation between being a Highlander and a Lowlander. There's not many kind of Americans that are into it. But it did strike me that there's going to be an awkward discussion between Prince Charles and Donald Trump. And you looked at that, and Donald Trump apparently has said that effectively he's going to be pretty robust with Prince Charles about climate change. How awkward do you think that meeting is going to be?
I think that would be an interesting one, I have to say. We could be pretty sure we're not going to get a readout from Prince Charles's side. The royals are notoriously discreet about these sort of things, sadly. Whether Donald Trump shares that or not, we'll have to see. But I think that could be really interesting. He's met Prince Charles before. He told me that, and he was quite pleased he'd met Prince Charles before and was happy to say they got on well. But I think without a doubt, Prince Charles is going to haul him over the coals for his climate change policies. You know, Donald Trump, of course, pulled out of the climate change accord in Paris, which was a very big deal. A big commitment to reduce emissions by 2050, which he is unilaterally withdrawn America from. I think that would be top of Prince Charles's list to have a go at him over. But the interesting thing about Prince Charles is, you know, about Donald Trump, rather, is, you know, he really doesn't listen to huge amounts of criticism. he doesn't certainly listen to a huge amount that's said about him in Britain. I don't think he's even aware of most of it, which is one thing I was quite startled by, you know, putting various bits to him in his office. It was all news to him. He had no idea, for example, Jeremy Corbyn was boycotting the state banquet. He had no idea that John Bercow didn't want to come and talk to Parliament. But the one thing he really is pretty obsessed about is the royal family. He has a lot of time and respect for the Queen and, you know, the Queen's close relatives in being Prince Charles. So quite interesting, if anyone can get through to Donald Trump and make a pretty, you know, emotional appeal, and I think the way you'd have to do that with Donald Trump is by, you know, charming him rather than shouting at him. It might just be Prince Charles and who knows, the Queen herself.
I suppose that's an interesting thing, because there's two ways of looking at the Prince Charles versus Donald Trump thing. The first school of thought is to say these people definitely hate each other because they've got completely different opinions. The other way of looking at it is Prince Charles likes a robust discussion. We saw that in the spider letters where he's writing to various government ministers a few years ago. They will have a frank exchange of views, but of course, Prince Charles will not slag Donald Trump off publicly, which will all be very good for the ego. So it could well be that they get on like a house on fire in that respect.
It could be. But look, I think the reality is Prince Charles is an expert at handling difficult situations, at handling foreign leaders. He spent, you know, 70 years, his entire adult life doing that. So the last thing the royal family know, well, the last thing the royal family know to do is not upset a quite emotional, quite sensitive foreign leader, let alone if he's the technical leader of the free world. So my bet is Prince Charles will come on with smiles, will, you know, pour on the royal charm with a giant pitchfork, and quite frankly, if anyone can have an effect, it could possibly be him.
So now on to, I think, Boris Johnson. I think this is the important thing. This is what you led with as your splash. What effect does President Trump's opinions have on the Conservative leadership election?
Well, I think that's a really interesting question. So if you are a certain-minded Conservative, maybe quite right-wing, very pro-American, maybe someone who's a big fan of Brexit and wants
Yes, Tom, correct, that is me. But anyway, continue.
If you're you, for example, then, quite frankly, you think having a lot of access to the US president, having the trust of the US president, which Boris clearly does, is a pretty good thing. If, however, you are, you know, a Tory wet, as we used to call them, a centrist, you know, maybe a Cameroon, as we call them these days, then perhaps sidling up to Donald Trump, who is not everybody's cup of tea, it has to be said, is a negative. So I think it's going to be quite interesting. It may well be that at the end of the day, it slightly balances itself out because, you know, it's probably not rocket science to think that Donald Trump would want Boris Johnson to win this thing. I interviewed him last year. Last year he said that he thought Boris Johnson would make an excellent prime minister. Boris Johnson at the time wasn't running for prime minister, so it was a less controversial thing to say. Because in the middle of the leadership contest, foreign leaders are really supposed to stay out of these sorts of things. So, in a way, it's something we sort of knew. My guess is probably it will just reinforce the stereotypes. If you like Boris, you'll like him more. If you don't like Boris, then he won't.
And what have we got to look forward to with Donald Trump over here? What are going to be the big moments or the scary moments from the coming week?
Well, Monday, I think, is going to be all the pomp and pageantry. So that'll be very much, you know, the royal affair. The Queen meeting him in Buckingham Palace. The guards marching up and down. The ceremony of music. Then the state banquet in the evening. That'll be all, quite frankly, what Britain does best. And you remember the scenes when Trump came last year from Blenheim Palace. It's beautiful sunset with the guards marching, all that beautiful sandstone. I mean, there's one thing we can still do. It really is promising. Nobody throws a show of state grandeur like us. Absolute pavement. So that'll be Monday. Probably with a bit of crowds protesting on the side, although I think they won't get within literally a mile of Buckingham Palace or Donald Trump himself. Tuesday's the political day. So that's Trump going to Downing Street. Talks with Theresa May most of the day, lunch in Downing Street. Quite a difficult conversation probably about quite a few things, not least Trump explains his views on how he thinks Theresa May handles the Brexit negotiations, which is, you know, not particularly well. I imagine they'll breeze over that quite quickly. But there are some big issues they will talk about. You know, Huawei, for example, the Chinese, huge Chinese communications firm who Theresa May, it would appear, would be reasonably happy to build at least some of the new 5G mobile network. Trump has got a massive problem with that because he's in a trade war with the Chinese and doesn't want us to touch Huawei. So that'll be some pretty different conversations. Also, detainees. The U.S. government are in charge of quite a few ISIS fighters, former ISIS fighters, in Syria at the moment. They very much want Britain to take them back so we can put them on trial here, as you've seen with Shamima Begum and a few others. We have no interest in having them back here, so that'll be quite a row. So I think there'll be some quite difficult conversations on Tuesday. Wednesday, we then flick into D-Day mode. So Theresa May and Donald Trump then go down to Portsmouth. It's quite a big event in Portsmouth, the sort of eve of D-Day celebrations or commemorations. And then Thursday, Theresa May, Donald Trump, and quite frankly, half the world's leaders then go over to Normandy on the 6th of June, D-Day itself, hosted by President Macron of France, and for the great 75th commemoration of the Allied landing. So it's going to be a pretty busy, pretty fascinating week all the way through.
Well, it's never a dull moment with Donald Trump. And Tom, let me congratulate you on that fantastic front page story. Obviously, we've trailed it. We've spoken to Tom Newton-Dunn, who was in the Oval Office with President Trump. We've not actually got the Sun newspaper yet in talk radio towers or News UK towers. But I look forward to seeing it, and I shall be reading it cover to cover when it arrives. Anyway, we're still taking your calls. Are you going to be happy that Donald Trump is coming to the UK? 0344 499 1000. I've still got some alternative news for the day. We've still got a couple of numbers free. I'm perfectly happy to take your calls on that. And also, I thought, you know, just to balance things out, because remember, the late night alternatives, late night alternative, balances Ian Lee's, you know, sort of unusual style and sort of no holds barred calls with the other side of it, which is my political bits and bobs. And hopefully we've attempted to get that balance right. Now, what I'm not sure about, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll go to a break and then we'll go and have a chat with my good mate, Rainbow George.
Democratic sonic involvement. Talk radio. We'll get you talking.
Hello and welcome back to the Late Night Alternatives, Late Night Alternative. I'm so, so sorry that Ian Lee is ill today and Kathy is away as well. And I know that this show has a unique culture that we've tried to keep up a little bit tonight. And with that in mind, I've got the wonderful Rainbow George on the line. Rainbow George, great to speak to you. How are you, mate?
Thank you. It's great to speak to Walker the Talker.
Walker the Talker. Well, luckily it's not Walker the Stalker, but I'm happy with Talker. Also, I've got to admit, sometimes I get Walker the Porker, which is a bit of a shame. Anyway, I'm sorry, the reason I wanted to get you back, Rainbow George, is because we'd cut you off before, and I'm trying to put together a show that's got some balance between the news of the day and also the usual late night alternative craziness, and I just thought that you were the guy to help me on that journey, on that process through time.
Thank you. Well, I was talking to you about the Wonder Party, Bands Party, which is emerging.
Yeah.
And there's a song lyric which is circulating, and each band does their own version of it and targets to get 100 people to join their band party and for a fiver, and that's 500 quid, and that pays for their election deposit, essentially. So
okay.
It's really nice, and that I've had a what seems like a stupid bet with Ian Lee. I've said that this song is going to win the 2020 Eurovision Song Contest.
Did you see that comedian? I forget his name, but he attempted to compete in the Eurovision Song Contest, and he asserted, and I don't know if it's true, but that there are certain countries across Europe that don't enter the Eurovision Song Contest because they can't afford the entry fee, which I think is something like 50,000 euros. Now, the rules on the Eurovision Song Contest are this. In order to enter, you have to put in the entry fee, and the song has to be written but not performed by somebody from the country. And I think the guy's Justin Lee Collins, actually, I'm sure it is, who said that apparently Andorra, you know, this tiny little country, I think in between France and Spain, Andorra has a song it would like to enter into the Eurovision Song Contest, but it just doesn't have the entry fee. So they said that if somebody was willing to give them the 50,000 euros and sang the song, they would allow them into the Eurovision Song Contest. Now, Rainbow George, I have always thought to myself that, frankly, I would be up for, so I think you're allowed in the Eurovision Song Contest, about 5 or 6 members. I'd be willing, personally, to put up 10,000 euros for my own seat in the Eurovision Song Contest and then just turn up. I don't know. You know, I might wear denim hot pants and a string vest. Just see how it goes, right? You never know. You might get through to the final. Now, obviously, you might not. But what a great fun day. Of all the things that you can do, Rainbow George, with 10 grand, I reckon that has got to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, but can I read out this lyric? Because I call myself an apprentice prophet, but I do suppose that I've been shown the future, and I think this could be the entry for a few different countries, each doing their own version of it. It's 131 words. Can I read them out?
You can.
Magical, mystical, musical, marvellous. Listen here and try to understand. Come on, come on, let's tick together, let's mark what's right. Let's tick together, let's spark the light. We are the music makers, we are the dreamers of dreams. We are the movers and shakers of the world forever, it seems. Bands of parties, wonder party bands, we're playing our ways to wonderlands, where all will be lovely, free and fair, with happy people everywhere. We are the music makers, we are the dreamers of dreams, we are the movers and shakers of the world forever, it seems. A world of wonders is ours to make, so come on, come on, for heaven's sake. Let's tick together, let's mark what's right. Let's tick together, let's spark the light.
Well, I'm going to give you a round of applause, actually. I really like that. Now, Sam in the gallery was less impressed because he believed there was an element of plagiarism. So, Sam, can you get on the mic and tell Rainbow George what bit it was that you believe was plagiarised? I think we want to hear this because we want to respond to this allegation.
Arthur O'Shaughnessy, we are the music makers.
Was it a poem by someone? Because I know it was in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is how I know it.
Ah, right. No, it was a long time ago, but it was
See, Rainbow George, what you've got to remember is that talk radio is filled with highly intelligent people. And not only can Sam Bushnell operate the studio equipment, he also has a working knowledge of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. How impressive is that?
Very impressive. I think it's past me. we acknowledge the Arthur O'Shaughnessy contribution to the lyrics.
We acknowledge the correctness of the sign.
it's a new song. It's called Let's Tick Together, and it links to a biblical prophecy that talks of a time when the people will sing a new song. And there are also many biblical prophecies about the people of the islands, and I'm convinced that Britain and Ireland, we are the people of the islands, and we will join together to lead the way to.
Doesn't the people of the islands normally refer to people from Tonga?
No, I'm convinced that the biblical references are to islands, or there's more than two islands.
There's several hundred islands in the British Isles.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, I think most of them are actually Scotland. And I mean that as a serious comment. I think, like, England only has Sheppey, the Isle of Wight, and Great Britain. I think that might be... And Anglesey. Oh, no, Anglesey's Wales. So I think it might just be three islands.
the referendum that's going to come up is going to be a referendum between a deal or no deal, essentially. That has to be what comes out of all of this Brexit extravaganza, and I'm very optimistic. I do suppose that our islands are going to join together and become the wise islands. We will Brexit and the Irish will Irexit. And I'm very optimistic for the future. I think our whole present system is going to collapse and be replaced by something brilliant.
Well, you are an optimistic man, Rainbow George, in a pessimistic world. And so, therefore, I thank you for that. And thank you so much, Rainbow George, for coming back. Now, remember, Rainbow George has given us a call, but there's plenty of others of you out there who can give us a call as well. Just because Ian Lee is away, just because Kathy is away, doesn't mean you can't give us a call in. Now, I know that some of you are not as keen on the political stuff, but I think, actually, I might have won you over with a bit of balance between the two. 0344 499 1000. Do give me a call. Let me know what you think. Because, you know, I asked the question at the beginning of the show. Do you like Donald Trump? Would you have a beer with him? I remember there was a caller earlier who suggested having a can of Cronenberg 1664 at Stonehenge with Donald Trump. I will say to you, even though Donald Trump is not a big drinker, I think he'd enjoy that. A good cold tinny on a bit of a windswept Stonehenge. I think that would be amazing. That would be the perfect thing to come to in Britain. You know, I'll tell you what you probably won't do. There's a lot of people who go to Stonehenge, like Druids, who take various illegal narcotics. Now, Donald Trump, I admit, on some occasions, has said things that are fairly emphatic. But I do not, for one, believe that there is any relationship between that and the use of hard drugs. I think some people are just a bit out there and a little bit like that. So do give me a call, 0344 499 1000. Now, you know, of all these news stories, I was getting everyone to pick from 1 to 10 what stories they wanted to talk about. And there was one that I just wanted to mention to you. In fact, I'm going to pick number 6. Number 6. I lost fear after blender explosion. Lawrence Kelly, 28, he was a keen amateur chef. He's almost lost his sight when his blender exploded, throwing all over his face boiling soup. Boiling soup on the face. Must have been like napalm all over him. This guy must have been really, really deeply upset and deeply angry. Anyway, coming up in the final hour of the show, the final hour, actually, of the Late Night Alternative's Late Night Alternative. Because remember, Ian Lee and Kathy will be back. We're going to be talking about, oh, what are we going to be talking about? We're going to be talking about how the Lib Dems are doing in the polls and the fact that everybody in Britain is now saying that Lib Dems are going to win the election. Shh. We all know it's the Brexit party that's doing well, but you're not allowed to say that in Hampstead. No, you're not allowed to say that at all. We're also going to be talking to Andrew Gilligan about what's in tomorrow's papers. Obviously, the biggest story of the day was that Donald Trump endorsement of Boris Johnson. What an incredible scoop for the Sun. I cannot wait to get it into the studio. But now I think we're going to head for a bit of a break.
Talk Radio.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Talk Radio. Get more passionate debate, more outspoken opinion, and more digital debate for the UK. Your voice counts. Get it heard on Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. This is the Late Night Alternative. Late Night Alternative with me, Andre Walker, in for Ian Lee and Kathy. Ian is ill and Kathy's having a well-deserved break. Well, what an amazing, interesting, bizarre show this is. Do you know, I absolutely love this time of day simply because the callers that call up, you know what, they are a little bit eccentric, but I will say something to you. There is nothing greater about this country than a great Brit of British eccentricity. And that makes me proud to be British. And when somebody phones me up and sings to me, and when somebody phones me up to convert me to evangelical Christianity, giving an example of a road traffic accident, I think to myself, I'm proud to be British. That's my incredibly awful impersonation of Winston Churchill. I'm sorry to any kind of professional impersonators out there. I'm just not very good. In fact, my friends say to me that I only have 4 impersonations and I just use them for everybody, whoever they are. So I think my Boris Johnson is probably the same as my Ken Livingstone. I don't know. They all kind of merge in together. But anyway, it is a bit of an exciting time at the moment politically, because there's been a YouGov opinion poll which has put the Lib Dems ahead in the general election polling. What an incredible thing. Brexit Party apparently comes second. They're a bit angry about the fact that they felt that they're being undervalued by the pollsters. Anyway, joined now by Billy Bambara, a freelance journalist and broadcaster. Billy, how are you, mate?
I'm very well, Andre. How are you?
Pretty good. Now, what an extraordinary thing. I'm going to list through the figures. So, this is about, if there were a general election held tomorrow, who would you vote for? So, the Liberal Democrats, 24, the Brexit Party, 22, Conservatives and Labour on 19, Green on 8, UKIP on 1, Change UK on 1, other, I think, what is it, on 6. Apparently, it's the second time ever that either the Conservatives or Labour have not topped a YouGov poll ever in the history of that organisation. What's it tell us?
It tells us that the people of this country are not happy with the two primary parties, the party that is in government and the opposition. So that is something that, of course, they will need to take note of. The Liberal Democrats are understandably celebrating this absolute win for them. They put themselves in a very strange situation a couple of years ago when they came out as the party that is the only party that was going to be the pro-Remain party. And that's not just the anti-government Brexit party, as Labour has done, but as the very much pro-European party, the pro-European Union Remain party. They've suffered for that very badly. In the 2016 election, they did very badly because of that stance. But now, because of that and because of their diehard commitment to that cause of Remain, they have found their place again in UK politics when we are dealing with such a hard split between the Leavers and the Remains. The Lib Dems have come to represent about 50% of the country who wants to remain. When it boils down to these two issues, you've got the Leavers on one side, broadly represented by the Brexit Party and the Conservative Party, and on the other side, the Remain Party, almost entirely and only represented by the Liberal Democrats. The Lib Dems have really found their limelight here. I expect it to be fleeting. And they should enjoy it while it lasts, and they need to make the most of this, a lot of free media attention that they're getting. But something needs to be said for the unspoken 48% here, who the Lib Dems are representing and how loud their voice can possibly be. And the real message is going to Jeremy Corbyn to say, are you not going to be the party that represents these 48%, the opposition to the government, which has been such a pro-Brexit government so far.
But do these opinion polls mean anything? Because if we even listen to what you've said, Billy, look, Lib Dems are at 24% in the polls, which you've just characterised as them representing the full 48% of people who voted Remain, which is patently not true. But also, I'm not too bothered about that, by the way, Billy. What really frustrates me is this, is when the European elections has been spun as evidence we should remain in the EU. It just feels like whichever way you vote, whatever you say, the political establishment, the political elite, will just come out with their own conclusion, whether it's true or not.
I think you are more or less correct in that assessment. I would like to say, firstly, that when I talk about the 48% there, of course, they do get strewn around all the parties, and certainly a huge majority of them have found a home with the Lib Dems.
Sure.
But as you say, the political climate means that the approach here is going to be a very nuanced one. And any political party that is seeking to form a viable government, that is one that can actually see this Brexit process through, I mean, of course, there's a Tory leadership debate going on at the moment, which is going to be a huge question over what kind of Brexit we are actually going to see at the end of the day. The question is whether they can get that through Parliament, whether it is going to broadly be the kind of Brexit that people want to see. Of course, a no-deal Brexit is something that a vast majority of a lot of experts and people that feel like they know what's going on, it's something that they don't want to see. But while that is generally supported by the Tory membership, so chances are we are going to see a Tory leader that is actually moving towards a no-deal scenario. It's still a very complex and detailed situation, and one that these kind of hard and fast lines, which the Lib Dems are strongly pushing up of this we're going to remain scenario, is something that is not realistic in terms of a proposal that is going to get put to the electorate. So while this is this poll can be seen for a win for the Lib Dems, in any kind of realistic scenario, to imagine if there was a general election, you know, within a month or so, with ample time for electioneering on all sides, that the Lib Dems would come out in the kind of position that this kind of poll projects them to is realistically quite fanciful.
Billy Bambra, a freelance journalist and broadcaster, talking about the kind of Lib Dem surge and whether it will last or not. Now, apparently, we have got Kevin from Heathrow. Are we ready? Well, apparently, we're not quite ready. But you know what I got told? See, Hayley and Sam told me earlier that they had somebody else on the line who wanted to play my alternative news game, which I thought was a great thing to play. By the way, I'm getting told off for having a go at them now. listen. I'll tell you what. Right, okay. So apparently, what I'm being offered as a substitute is that Hayley is going to pick a number rather than finding Kevin. No, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to get Kevin from Heathrow. Right, you do not know the amount of hassle that I've been getting from regular the late night alternative listeners about the fact that I've not kind of done enough of their calls and spoken to enough of their people. Well, here I am. Your Uncle Andre, your Uncle Dre is waiting for you. 0344 499 1000. I'd have spoken to Nigel in Heathrow, and I know that Kevin in Heathrow, and I know that it's not our fault that he's not on the line now. I was ready to do the picking of one of the numbers, and we will hopefully, I think, find him in another couple of minutes. Well, I'll tell you what I could do. I could go through some of the front pages of the national newspapers. Apparently, President Trump is going to meet Boris Johnson during his trip to London. That's the front page of the Times. This story about Extinction Rebellion and their potential to shut down Heathrow and how potentially that might have endangered lives and how they've had to issue a statement this evening is the front page of the Eye. Green on grope charges is the front page of the Daily Mirror. And we've got on the front page of the Independent, Brexit fudge will ruin Labour, Corbyn is warned. But, you know, I just said all that because I was just waiting for us to organise ourselves properly and get Kevin on the line. Kevin from Heathrow, how are you, mate? No!
Trick chair, it's not Kevin.
Okay, go on.
It's Julian. Oh. Kevin's busy.
Okay, Julian. Well, let me tell you. Having never...
Am I Andre?
Yeah, I've never spoken to either Julian or Kevin, so you didn't have to trick me. You could have admitted that it was Julian. That's no problem at all. Now, the numbers I've got left with the alternative... Can I tell you what numbers we've got left? We've got 2, 3, 6, 8 and 10.
I'll pick 10 then, please.
Do you know, I'm really pleased about that because I thought it was quite good. This is Crouch is a bit of a slouch. So, unbelievably, the former England... Oh, I know. Ooh, it's exciting. Exciting stuff. Right. So, former England football star Peter Crouch has admitted that he came second in the dad's race at his kid's school. Now, you know, the guy's about 18 foot tall. You know, surely one of his strides should have won the thing in one go.
He's a big boy, isn't he? Very tall.
Do you know, he said once, somebody asked him, what would you be if you weren't a footballer? And his answer was, a virgin, which I think is absolute genius.
Oh, they said that the other night on the telly. I saw that.
Really? He repeated it?
He was on the telly the other night, and he said that. I saw it. What was he on?
It's just the best line ever. I'll tell you what, I'm going to try and find out what he was on. But it's just a genius, it's an absolute genius line to come out with. But I'll tell you what, if you went to his school, or his kid's school, and suddenly there was the dad's race, I mean, you'd poo yourself, wouldn't you? Right, because suddenly Peter Crouch walks up. I mean, it's like having, you know, Linford Christie or something. And I'll tell you, the bloke who won, it must have been a pretty impressive thing. I mean, the guy, you know what it doesn't say is, it doesn't say, because you can bet your bottom dollar that Peter Crouch's kids go to quite a posh school where other sports stars send their kids. So I bet it was somebody like Mo Farah or something was the bloke that actually won the dad's race.
Well, if I was straight, I'd love Abby Clancy to take me to school.
You'd love to have who to take you to school?
Well, his missus. I'd love her to take me to school if I was straight for it.
By the way, where do you live in Heathrow? Is it Stanwell you live in, Stanmore? What's that bit near Heathrow that most people live in?
It's the Young Offenders Prison in Feltham. Whenever I speak to, the one who always cuts you off, the bald bloke.
James Whale.
That's the
bald bloke who always cuts you off. Can you imagine? Can you imagine a talk radio advert? Listen to talk radio with the bald guy who always cuts you off.
Oh, he does. He gets angry and he gets, if you don't agree with him, he cuts you off. Anyway, whenever I speak to him, whenever Kevin does, he says, oh, I know you. You're from the Young Offenders. And he says, no, I'm from the old offenders, not young.
I have to get the train past that, because if I'm coming to talk radio, I normally get the train from Windsor and Eaton Riverside to Waterloo Station.
Get you.
Oh, come on, right? Come on. It's, hang on. Windsor is full of soldiers and people who work at a castle, right? I mean, that's not like the richest town in the world, is it?
I didn't say it was the richest town, but it's a bit posh, isn't it? Windsor and Eaton.
I think
we're about right soldiers.
I think Eton's a bit posher than Windsor, but either way, I'll tell you something. In truth, Julian, there's nothing posh about me, and you can take the boy out of the Northwest, but you can't take Northwest out of the boy. And look, you know what? I'm a pie eating scrote at the best of times, and nothing. You could move me anywhere. You know, always remember, you can't polish a turd.
Well, you could try.
But you can roll it in glitter. Hey!
Yeah. Anyway, you know dinosaurs?
Yes.
You know they're dead?
Yeah, I do know they're dead, yeah.
Well, you know the Brontosaurus?
Yes.
I've got a theory about the Brontosaurus.
Okay, go on. I can't wait for this.
Well, it's long and thin at one end, and it's big and fat at the middle.
Right.
And it's long and thin at the other end.
Okay.
And it's got four legs.
It has.
I thought that all myself.
Hang on, is that the full theory?
That's my theory.
Well, but that's not a theory, that's merely a biological description of it.
No, it's not. It's a theory.
No.
It's a biological description. Have you ever seen one?
Well, it's like me saying, I've got a theory about, I don't know, Hayley Hayes, the producer, that she is, you know, wearing a pink top and is female. Well, it's not a theory, right? It's a fact. It's
indisputable. Have you seen Have you seen Hayley?
Well, I can see her right now, yeah.
It's back then, isn't it? Have you seen a brontosaurus?
No, I have not seen a brontosaurus, but I'll tell you what I've done. No, I'll tell you what I've done. I've seen a skeleton of a brontosaurus, which...
How do you know?
Right.
How do you know?
I'll tell you...
I've been told.
I'll tell you how I know, because by definition, if you call it, if you get a skeleton out and put it together and by definition call it a brontosaurus, it's a brontosaurus. Can I tell you why? Because when brontosauruses were alive, there was no such thing as language, therefore they couldn't have been called brontosauruses, so whatever we call a brontosaurus is by definition a brontosaurus.
Jay.
Yeah.
This brontosaurus, right, did you see it in the Natural History Museum?
I can't remember where I saw it. But yes, probably.
Well, that's a Diplodocus, so it's not a brontosaurus, so you're wrong.
Right, I'm really sorry, but I have no idea what a Diplodocus or whatever it is. No idea at all. But anyway, Julian, thank you so much for your call. I think we're going to take another quick break. We'll be back straight after this.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Hello, welcome back to the Late Night Alternative's Late Night Alternative. You know, you can tell I'm really proud of that title. I've said it about a billion times. Well, you know, I thought we'd look at tomorrow's papers, or today's papers, I suppose, because it is kind of 20 past midnight. So I think we will look at today's papers. And I'm joined by Andrew Gilligan, senior correspondent from the Sunday Times. Andrew, how are you?
How are you? I'm all right.
I'm feeling pretty good, mate. Pretty good, to be honest. Now, what I thought I'd do is, I don't know if you've yet got the papers in front of you, but I thought what I'd
go
through them myself and kind of just mention some of them. Well, actually, if you do have them in front of you, what we can do first is talk about this big front page on The Sun, which we've interviewed Tom Newton-Dunn on this show already and talked about it. Andrew, you've been around for a long time. You kind of understand the way that that the world of politics and even, you know, the Conservative Party and the Labour Party work. What effect does this have on the Tory leadership election that Donald Trump has effectively backed Boris Johnson?
Well, it'll probably won't do him a huge amount of harm with the membership, which, of course, the people who will vote in the end. But it might make Boris's journey to kind of rebuild his relationship with quite a lot of the rest of Britain harder, if he's seen as a kind of big ally of Trump. Now, it's coming in one direction, to be fair. The love is going from Trump to Boris rather than the other way around. And I know a lot of people have called Boris the kind of British Trump, Trump with more syllables, Trump with a thesaurus, that kind of thing. But I think that's an unfair comparison. If you look at how he actually behaved in office when he was mayor of London, it's almost an absurd comparison. He funded clinics for refugees. He spent money on public services. He was a Liberal mayor. So the temptation's there to make the comparison between the two. And this is only going to make it even more tempting, but it's not, they're not really the same.
But it's really funny, isn't it? Because they're both slightly overweight, blonde, and kind of quite charismatic. I mean, people will have a tendency to compare them. I always remember Theresa May was heavily compared to Margaret Thatcher. And what the truth of the matter was, the similarity was, they were both Conservative and women. And really, that is where the similarity kind of ended. So are we kind
that's
of...
That's where it began and ended.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Are we kind of... Do we get too obsessed with trying to, find a British Trump or not find a British Trump or say that we need somebody who's a populist leader like Trump or we definitely don't want somebody? Are we basically too obsessed with Trump, I suppose, is the question?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the problems is we think, America, because they speak English we watch a lot of the same TV, that we're the same with them. Actually, America is a very, very different country, massively different politically, and very strange and weird in all sorts of ways for Brit, and ditto, I'm sure they find us very strange and weird. There isn't much of a read over between American and British politics, is the blunt answer.
Yeah. In terms of people who might not be natural Donald Trump supporters. When I was talking to Tom Newton-Dunn earlier, I was kind of asking about my theory about the whole Prince Charles and Donald Trump thing, because they're meeting up with each other, and what Donald Trump has said about Prince Charles is he said, well, we will be talking. I can say we have among the cleanest climate around the world. Our air and water are doing very well. So apparently he's going to challenge Prince Charles on the issue of climate change, and obviously Prince Charles presumably will respond back. Now, I'm not so sure about this being a really bad thing. And Tom Newton Dunn, by the way, I should say, said he felt that if anyone can persuade Donald Trump of the case for supporting the environment, it's Prince Charles. Equally, there's two ways of looking at this. Either they're going to lock heads and hate each other, or actually they're going to get on quite well because they'll have an interesting and robust debate, with the added advantage that Prince Charles isn't going to slag him off afterwards, no matter what he says. Yeah. What's your take on that?
Trump loves royals. And actually that's why he's coming, I'm sure. He's not coming to see poor old Theresa May. He's probably not even coming to see Boris. He's coming to see the royals.
To be fair, the only person who goes to Downing Street to see Theresa May is Philip May. I mean, and even he wants her to leave.
That's right. He's a celebrity, you know, he is obsessed. He's got this marvellous celebrity antenna. And he recognises the royals as one of the few people in the world who are bigger celebrities than he is, and it's pretty much that simple for Trump, and he's looking to have their kind of glory rubbed off on him a bit, and make him look a bit classy. That's pretty much it, I'd say.
Do you know, I know this is going to sound absolutely crazy, but I've often thought that if after Donald Trump leaves being president, given that he's effectively entitled to UK citizenship, I wonder if we offered him a peerage, a seat in the House of Lords, I wonder whether he wouldn't accept it. I know that sounds absolutely crazy for a retired American president, but he's so obsessed with this whole British tradition thing, this whole royal thing, this whole castles and chivalry thing, that you just wonder whether he might not just do it, just for the vanity of the whole thing.
That is such a terrific idea. I mean, and actually, you know, if Boris becomes Prime Minister, well, look, you know, Trump's a businessman. He understands it's a transactional thing, right? So he'd have to give us something in return, like, you know, a trade deal or something for us giving him a peerage. But I kind of think, I mean...
My idea is the Earl of Washington. I think he'd quite like that. Or Viscount New York. That'd be good.
It would. I mean, can you imagine the horror in the House of Lords?
They would go crazy.
They would all die of heart attack.
I mean, I'll tell you one thing. The House of Commons is a nest of pro-European anti-Trumpism, but the House of Lords, it would be stratospheric. You can imagine Peter Hayne, and oh my God, it'd be one of the best things ever. Because there is part of the whole love of Donald Trump is that, you know, you are trolling the left by his sheer existence. And the more you can do it, I guess, the more fun it is.
Well, I want to be clear about this. Trump is a completely vile individual. He's got the most appalling record in government of lying and, like, you know, doing all the wrong things politically. But yeah, there is a certain satisfaction in just seeing how horrified all the lefties are about him. That's part of the excitement with Boris as well, even though they're really not the same. I mean, I do think, at the same time, you know what? The left and Trump need each other. And you've seen, like, newspapers like the New York Times, they've become completely obsessed with Trump. They never write about anything else, it seems. And it's been brilliant for their circulation. At the same time, Trump needs the New York Times. He keeps slagging them off to rile up his supporters as the enemy inside the gates. And I just think it's again, I mean, like so many things with Trump, it's showbiz. It's a commercial transaction.
Sticking with Trump, we've got the Saturday Times, which is not you, and the Daily Express, and both of them are talking about who Donald Trump's going to meet. So the Times says that Donald Trump will meet Boris Johnson, and the Express is Nigel Farage lamenting that he's been banned from meeting Trump.
Banned is inverted commas, isn't it? It's kind of like his entourage is... have been told by Number 10 is not to meet me. Apparently, that's the quote from Farage. I mean, I don't know. I kind of think if Trump wants to meet Farage, he'll probably meet Farage.
Well, I was I always thought the way you would do it is, what's the name of the ambassador's residence? Herwood House or whatever it's called.
Winfield House.
Winfield House, that's it. Well, I mean, actually, I think Herwood House is a school in Yorkshire. Anyway, apologies, but Winfield House. But presumably, if you actually wanted to meet anybody, you would just drag them along to there. What you wouldn't start doing is dictating the British delegates to a state dinner. You would only give away the seats to Americans. Mm. Standard protocol anyway, isn't it?
No, that's right. That's right. The look, I mean, I'd be pretty surprised if Farage doesn't stumble across Trump's path at some point in the next few days. They are pretty close mates. And as you remember, Trump told the British government that he wanted Farage to be the next ambassador to Washington.
Can I tell you a funny story about that? I actually wrote it as an article in the New York Observer, which between you and I is owned by Jared and Ivanka. And I wrote this article, and then 2 days later, Donald Trump tweeted about it. But annoyingly, he didn't give me a hat tip, and so I didn't get the million extra Twitter followers that I would have got otherwise. But I always liked to feel quite proud about the fact that I was literally just sat one day thinking, what am I going to write in my column? Oh, well, you know what? Go for it. Let's say that Nigel Farage should be British ambassador. And it kicked off like an absolute firestorm later. But once again, I got absolutely no credit for it. I was gutted. It just shows, Andrew, the flow of news. This was an completely made up idea by me that just started to get legs. it's a sad world we live in. Now, you say that you do have the newspapers in front of you. Is there anything that particularly caught your eye?
I've got the front pages.
Great. Anyway.
I've got the front pages. So, Trump and Boris is the story of the day.
Yes.
We've got another kind of fat businessman with character problems, Philip Green. He's on the front page of The Guardian. He's been charged with assault.
Yeah, I'm nervous about this because he comes across as a real wrong'un, but people have been found not guilty before, even when seem to have all these weights of allegations against them. But the problem is with him, it just strikes you that he's just not a very nice guy. But I suppose if you're going to build a business empire in the way that he has, then you're never going to be a nice guy. It's just where that line is drawn. Oh, by the way, I should say, obviously, these are allegations of sexual assault. What I was talking about was more the allegations of harassment and bullying, which obviously are a serious thing, but are quite a different thing.
Yeah. I think, I think Green is, even by the standards of big businessmen, a pretty dubious character. He's got a long record of taking fortunes out of these businesses. Which are now in serious trouble. He's taken, I think, £1 billion, is that right? Him and his wife have taken £1 billion in dividends, out of businesses, and they've been starved of investment, and they are in serious trouble. Now, closing down shops, of course, British Home Stores, he sold that for £1 to a chancer, that went out of business, everyone lost their jobs, the pensions went down, and I just don't think that kind of behaviour is right, even leaving aside all the sexual allegations, harassment allegations, and all the other stuff. One of my colleagues on the paper, Ollie Shah, the business editor, has did a lot of work to expose Philip Green, both his business practice and his personal behaviour. And he really is the most, foul-mouthed bully. He kind of ring you up in the middle of the night and start swearing at you down the phone, that kind of thing. I don't like that, and I can't imagine. I can't understand for the life of me why he was ever given a knighthood.
Well, I think there has been a glut of people who were just given them just for PR purposes, which is a sad thing, and it does denigrate, really, the system of honours. But also, I spotted in the papers that they're after him, the pensions regulator is after him for another 50 million for Arcadia's, underfunded pension scheme. And it does strike me that this guy, in many respects, is just an asset stripper. I think you're right to make the point about the Dominic Chappelle purchase of British Home Stores. It was very clear that he was just offloading a turkey once he'd emptied the coffers. He was just getting rid of this thing in order to avoid any blame for it.
Yeah, no, I agree. But you know what? He kind of pushed his luck too far, and he's now become a kind of leper in polite society. He can barely show his face in London now, and I'm pleased about that. I think it's right, and I think he. he's a terrible lesson to other people tempted to follow in his footsteps.
Well, here's a question related to Philip Green, because obviously you've got quite strong opinions about him. You know, is the corporate world, is casino capitalism out of control? Is, you know, are big dons like Philip Green too powerful?
I think, look, I'm a big believer in capitalism. But the fact is, it's under real threat. We've got Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell breathing down, you know, our necks politically. They could well be the next Prime Minister and Chancellor. That would be catastrophic for the country. But it could happen because the people in charge of capitalism, the economic system, have made a mess of it. And they failed to defend it properly. They failed to behave in ways which get public support. And as a result, I think a lot could be swept away, as a result of the misbehavior of people like Philip Green, but also the more ordinary greed of average corporate bosses, the kind of people who pay themselves vast sums and bonuses for successes, even when the companies are failing, even when profits are falling and investments falling and the share price has collapsed, they still somehow always seem to walk away with more money. And I just think capitalists have got to, you know, they've got to attend to their washing, if that's not a mixed metaphor. They have to start worrying that the whole system's going to be torn down because of the excesses of people like them.
Well, I always thought when I used to work for a variety of Conservative MPs and various people, and it always struck me with some Conservative politicians, but not all, but it has to be said, many Conservative politicians had this sort of Alan Bastard attitude about capitalism, and fundamentally didn't understand how the market was supposed to regulate things, and they just had this attitude where frankly they found parasitic capitalists to actually be quite funny and amusing, and certainly weren't keen to make any attempts to prevent this going on. I mean, if you look at the financial crisis of 2008, you know, what it seemed to me had happened was that a lot of you know, shareholders were left with bills, whereas so in the good times the bankers made a fortune at putting together dodgy deals, and in the bad times the shareholder were handed the losses and didn't get the bonuses back.
That's right. I mean, it was what they said, the profits were privatized, the risks were nationalized. It wasn't just the shareholders that had to bail them out. It was the taxpayers as well. And look, I think we really have to start thinking about how we make these kind of people behave more responsibly. They're obviously incapable of doing it on their own. And I think that's probably the way we stave off the likes of Corbyn and McDonnell in the long term. Because, you know, at some point, unless we do something, we will see a hard left government in this country at some point. It might not be a Corbyn government. It might be whoever's the next leader after Corbyn. But at some point it will happen, and it will be catastrophic for the country.
Well, I've seen Conservatives increasingly say that if there is not a Brexit by the next general election, they're just going to vote for the Brexit Party on the grounds that you can't stop Corbyn now. I've heard people say that. And look, we can put up with Corbyn having a disastrous government for 3 years. What we can't cope with is losing our democracy.
Well, that is a bonkers thing to think, to be honest, because obviously Corbyn is not going to do a hard Brexit either. He only believes in Brexit quite clearly, but he's not going to give all those MPs you've been talking to the kind of Brexit they want. Plus, he will undo absolutely everything the Tory party has achieved in the last 30 years. I mean, everything since 1979. That's his clear and declared aim. And I wouldn't bet on him not managing it. I know a lot of people think a Corbyn government would be short-lived. It would collapse. It would be hounded out of office by the markets or whatever. I'm not so sure. I think they would entrench. I think they would, you know, they would, they'll give 16 and 17 year olds the vote. They'd hammer the press. They'd force judges into compulsory retirement at 55 with all the new judges chosen by Shami Chakrabarty. They would do all sorts of things to entrench their power and keep it.
And actually, Andrew, we found that with Quangocracy, haven't we? Because what's happened is the expansion of Quangos and the regulator. We live in a regulator world, not a democracy anymore. And of course, what happens is the Conservatives come in, the Quangocrats don't change, the regulators don't change. You know, the people on the Transport for London board, as an example, are all the same old lefties, whatever you vote for the mayoralty.
Yeah, there's a powerful kind of institutional leftism. It's called, some people call it cultural Marxism. Apparently that's not an allowed term anymore, but you know, there's a lot of people in the universities and the professions and the bureaucracy now who are instinctively left wing and who you know, run their bits of the bureaucracy and the civil society in an instinctively left wing way, and that's quite regardless of how anyone votes.
Andrew,
we see that with some of the official efforts to frustrate Brexit.
We're going to have to run in a couple of minutes, well, pretty soon. But I just wanted to raise one final thing, because it's something that's come up on Talk Radio today, and we're desperately annoyed, by the way, that Extinction Rebellion, despite our begs, would not appear on the show. But that's up to them. But part of the reason... Well, sorry, I don't want to put words into their mouths, but I am making the assumption that Extinction Rebellion are not appearing on the show tonight because of this story, which is on the front page of the Weekend paper, which is that they had threatened to disrupt Heathrow with drones, and Talk Radio, I think, exposed this earlier today, and they've now made a statement saying that they will try and shut down Heathrow, but they will not endanger lives. Now, Extinction...
That's good of them.
I know, it's unbelievable. Extinction Rebellion, though, I mean, because it's such a trendy subject, they seem to get away with this, don't they?
Well, look, I mean... I think Extinction Rebellion in April, when they did those demos, are quite smart, because they did enough to cause quite a lot of disruption and get themselves on all the front pages, but they didn't do enough to actually cripple London, because, you know, they sat on some bridges, but other bridges were still open, and of course they disrupted the bus service, but the tube service was still running. They didn't actually, you know, if they didn't actually, for instance, close the M25, close Heathrow, close the Underground, close all the things without which London and the South East genuinely would grind to a halt. They did. They were, obviously, it was a lot more than token, but they, you know, it was quite subtle and calibrated. Now I think the danger and so, you know, you've got all these middle class commentators saying, actually, well, we really believe, you know, we agree with them, and they're doing the right thing. Now if and they weren't seriously inconvenienced themselves. If they tried to shut down Heathrow, particularly if they did it in a way which endangered life, then I think that really ups the stakes. And I think they're smart enough to realise that. But I don't know. Maybe they aren't. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe they're not.
I think.
Because
I think
clearly
it's a
big deal. Flying a drone into an airport, and it's a criminal offence punishable by up to 5 years imprisonment.
I think what you're highlighting is exactly the issue that the IRA had in the 1970s and 80s. What they realised was disruption was much better for their cause than actually having body bags outside pubs.
Yeah.
Anyway, Andrew, thank you so much. Those are the papers. We've gone through the front page with Andrew Gilligan, senior correspondent for the Sunday Times. He's brilliant, isn't he? I absolutely love him. Andrew, thank you so much for coming on. We're heading towards the end of the Late Night Alternative's Late Night Alternative. Don't know if it's ever going to happen again, because obviously I'm only on tonight because Ian Lee is away. But we've got Martin Kellner coming up in a bit. And you know what I think? I think we should have a bit of a chat with him just after this.
Digital debate for the UK. Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.
Hello, hello. This is Andre Walker in for Ian Lee, who is sadly off ill. He's got a stomach bug. He hasn't given us any real details about it. He's not gone into the graphic disgusting, whatever it is. Maybe it's not disgusting. Maybe it's going to be okay for him in the end. Anyway, please do give me a call. I know there's not long left, but we've got Martin Kellner coming up next. It's 0344 499 1000. You're not going to believe this. I completely forgot throughout the entire show to say that you can tweet me at Talk Radio, and also you can drop me a text 87222. That's 25 pence plus your standard network rate. Make sure you start the text with the word talk, because otherwise we won't get to see it. Now, I'm going to read out some tweets now. Oh, here we go. Come on, right. This bloke is called Pete Dylan Trenchard. I'll get my tin hat on for this one, Pete. I hope At Talk Radio doesn't have any desire to put on a political show at 10 p.m. in the long term. Ian and Kath are an oasis of fun and madness. Tonight's show has really driven home how political chat is the last thing I want after a long day. Well, Pete, what can I say to you? At least we've given you something to think about, even if the only thought is that you never wish to hear it again. No, Pete, let me just assure you, this is purely a bit of sickness cover, because Ian Lee is off ill. He will be back as ever, I believe, you know, whenever he's meant next to be back. Is it tomorrow?
No, he's not. Well, they do a recorded thing on a Saturday.
Oh.
It's shocking. I always say shocking because it's a live radio station. It's sort of pre-records of stuff he's done during the week. But that's what we do. It's a chance to catch up on all the Ian Lee you might have missed. You might make it into the pre-record. Who knows?
everyone knows that you can hear the dulcet tones of Martin Kellner, who's up in a couple of minutes.
Certainly am. Yes, it's always a joy, Andrew, as a radio presenter, to stand in for a highly popular presenter. Many years ago, when I was working at the BBC, they said, do you want to do a stand-in at BBC Radio London, 9 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday? And I said, yeah, brilliant, that sounds like a good slot, 9 o'clock, Saturday morning. And they said, yeah, you're standing for a guy called Chris Evans.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And I'd never heard of the guy.
Really?
I didn't know he was a hugely popular guy. This was maybe 20, 25 years ago. I never knew. I just blithely said, oh, sure, no problem. And I hadn't heard the show. And I went in, did my own thing.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know how to do anything else. Went in, did my own thing. And fortunately, there was no Twitter in those days. So the mountain of hate that descended on me was just through the station's message boards and phone calls and things.
I've got the pitchforks out and got angry. Yeah. No, actually, do you know, Colin Williamson has tweeted to say, refreshing change tonight, better entertainment. Remember, it's the late night alternatives, late night alternative.
Yeah.
And the alternative will return to the original alternative at the usual time. I don't know if
Monday is the usual time.
I think if you listen to that, I did actually get that right. Martin, what have you got coming up on the show?
Well, now, watch out for, this is a highly important story, watch out for an invasion of midges.
If you're Scottish, though, normally.
No, hang on. They've already stretched from Scotland to the north of England.
The
warm, wet winters that we've been having, perfect conditions for midges. Interesting enough, the guy I'm going to be talking to is a bit of a midge fan. He's from an organisation called Bug Life, and what Bug Life are all about is really not extinguishing any species. So basically, whatever species, even if it's an annoying thing like midges, they have a place in the whole ecosystem. And this guy says, you know, forget it. You just have to make do with being
bitten. It's all interconnected, isn't it? Mm. Do you know, I started in my house, I started killing, or not killing, but getting rid of cobwebs. And suddenly the next problem you've got is moths. So now my house, if you come to my house, I've not removed a cobweb in like 2 years. It's perfect. Spiders are our friends.
Yes, well, they are. And according to this guy, midges are our friends.
But what's good about midges then?
I'll tell you what. Other swallows and I think it's wagtails and various wildlife that we really enjoy seeing when we go to the countryside, they live on midges. They eat midges. So
really?
If you get rid of the midges, then we'll get rid of these species as well. And it's that old thing about, you know, if you chop down a tree in China, you know.
But does that mean that midges are moving south into northern England? Does that mean more birds will move south? Because Scotland is much better for kind of bird life, isn't it, than England is. So maybe that's a benefit, right?
Yeah, well, you would think so. I mean, I live in Wakefield, so they're never going to get to Wakefield.
Nothing ever gets to Wakefield.
Yeah.
Wakefield's main exports are crime, poverty and ignorance, aren't they?
Very much so. And I'm delighted to be bringing that great triptych to the talk radio audience.
By the way, if anyone's listening in Wakefield, I'm joking.
Do live in Wakefield because they write to me. But they know I'm only joking, saying in a very loving way. I'm not from there, actually. I'm from Manchester originally.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm just doing missionary work there. So, Wakefield is one of those places where
Do you know, Martin, we're going to end up, you and I, like, have you ever seen that Alan Partridge where he offends the farmers? We're going to end up getting chased by the people of Wakefield.
People have mentioned Alan Partridge to me on a number of occasions. I'm sure they have to you too. People will tweet things that you've done on the show, and they'll tweet accidental Partridge.
Oh, it's so upsetting, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I don't mind.
Who invented the skip? I don't care who invented the bloody skip. Who invented the skip? So what else have you got?
Well, apart from that, I'm talking to... this is interesting. I don't know, did you see the picture of the sort of traffic jam of people at the summit of Everest?
Isn't that weird?
Phenomenal. That huge, you know, you can't get... And you think you go mountaineering for the solitude.
That's right.
For being out there at one with nature. And it's like...
And it's like Oxford Circus.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Unbelievable. Well, I'll be talking on the show, I'm very excited about this, to the first woman to climb Everest. She climbed it about, I think, the mid-90s. And she was the very first woman right to the summit of Everest.
Wow.
So I'll be asking her what she thinks about, you know, a great traffic jam of people at the top of Everest.
Don't they restrict some of these big mountains nowadays? I think in Nepal they have some restrictions on people, but I don't know how it works.
Well, how it works is you have to get a license.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, and you buy it from the Nepalese government.
Right.
It's quite expensive, I think, and you get Sherpas to go with you. So they provide Sherpas, they provide all the sort of infrastructure you need to get to the top of Everest. But it costs a lot of money, and they're very reluctant to cut down on the number of people that go up there because that's their income.
If I wanted a license, are they bothered about how competent you are, or are they more interested
It's just the money, is it? It's a big issue with
mountaineers. Because, I mean, if I attempted to scale Everest, presumably I wouldn't be that good at it, but they would still allow me up to have a go anyway.
Yeah, there's no, as far as I understand it, and I'll check this out with the lady who climbed it and knows about it. And also, actually, on tomorrow's show, we're going to talk a bit to somebody from the International Mountaineering Association, whatever they're called, to check. But I think it is a big issue. There's no sort of limit on your professionalism. You can, if you've got the money, you can go.
You can
up
do
there.
It.
And the other thing that's causing a problem is because of weather conditions, there's only a small window in which you can climb up to the summit of Everest.
Oh, of course.
Because the weather wouldn't allow you
to.
So, like, everybody goes up there. May, very, very popular. There's a few days in May that are hugely popular. So, we'll talk about that, the traffic jam at the top of Everest, mainly because it was such a striking
picture. Yeah, it's completely mad, isn't it? Yeah. Completely ridiculous.
And we do this film club, which is largely lame puns. And basically, we're doing movies tonight because it's the Cricket World Cup. And one of you, I know we're not talk sport, but if you look at the news stories, and especially this morning's papers, all of them have got 16-page supplements on either the World Cup, the Cricket World Cup, which is taking place in England at the moment, or the Champions League final between Spurs and Liverpool, which is taking place as well. So we'll look at that. We'll look at the Cricket World Cup, and not so much from who's playing, but what it means for the sport of cricket.
Yeah.
Because it's 6 weeks...
Well, it's going to be huge for this country, isn't it? People absolutely get into it. I mean, I always get quite shocked when I see the Ashes, and they've got that kind of little thimble that you win for getting it. But nonetheless, you know, cricket is so huge, and having the World Cup is just going to be amazing fun for loads of people.
It is. Well, they try... I mean, the thing about huge sport events in this country is that they set a very high bar at the 2012 Olympics with Danny Boyle's opening ceremony, you know, the Queen parachuting and, you know...
Although, ironically, I thought the Queen parachuting in was the bit that didn't really work. But
most of it did, though, didn't
it? No, it did. It was all right.
I know a lot of people on the right wing of politics did complain about it because it was all about the national
secretly. I had a friend of mine who's the Conservative MP who described it as multicultural CRAP.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, apparently he got David Cameron phoned him up and he said, look, we all hate it. We know it's an insult to the Conservatives. We know that the Voldemort attacking the NHS is meant to be Margaret Thatcher. We fully understand all that. What we've all agreed to do is pretend we've not noticed. So they go, oh yes, it's all marvellous. Yeah. But it was funny funny, you know, they said...
Well, he went a bit early on the tweet, didn't he? He, you know, sometimes with Twitter, I find it's best to wait to see which way the wind's blowing a little. Yeah, if you're a I don't care, I'll put anything on there, but
yes.
If I were a politician, I'd just have a little, just see how the wind's blowing and think, maybe I'll just hold back on
this
a bit.
You've got to be so careful. I mean, Martin, you will remember me from when, after the London Bridge attack, I challenged the Islamic State to a sword duel, right? And, yeah. And it's fair to say, I woke up with a million retweets, or it probably wasn't a million, but it was crazy. It went absolutely global. By the way, I bet the Islamic State they wouldn't kill me and had a photo with a sword. Bet them £50,000, still alive. Yeah. The point I was trying to make, by the way, was that these people are cowards, and actually even the most rudimentary, you know, goading of them will solicit no response whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting tweet. You're still alive. It's amazing, isn't it?
Still just... Well, all of that is coming up
is
with
coming
Martin
up.
Kellner, who's on in a couple of minutes. Well, I've got to say, Martin, looking forward to the show.
Oh, bless
Can't
you.
Wait to hear
And, of course,
all
you'll stay
stuff.
Away until 5 o'clock, won't you?
I will absolutely stay away. Well, you know, the other day, by the way, I ended up covering for you. And the reason I ended up covering for you is because,
Dolan wasn't available.
Dolan thought Friday's show, Saturday's show was on Sunday morning. And so I got a phone call at the last minute, kind of going, can you come in now? And I was really pleased to be able to be filling in for you until I realised I wasn't filling in for you. I was filling in for the person filling in for you.
Yeah.
I was absolutely gutted about it. Well, okay, that's all coming up on Martin's show. Really looking forward to it. So this has been the Late Night Alternatives, Late Night Alternative. To those of you who enjoyed it, please do contact Talk Radio to tell them how marvellous it was. For those of you who didn't like it, do not worry. The Late Night Alternatives, Late Night Alternative was purely an act of sick cover. And Ian Lee will be back with Kathy very, very, very soon indeed. You don't have to worry about any of it. My dulcet tones will probably next be on. Probably be on with Julia Hartley Brewer or Mike Graham. Seriously looking forward to that. And as ever with my show, I always like to thank my producers. Today they were Sam Bushnell, Hayley Hayes and Alex Farrell. Alex didn't make it as far as the office today. He, I think, from the pub worked out everything that he was going to do. If you want to give Martin a call, give him a call 0344 499 1000. You can tweet him at Talk Radio. I will see you very soon.
The mother of all radio stations. Talk Radio. We'll get you talking.